This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Should all acquaintance be forgot and never brought to mind? Should acquaintance be forgot in days of auld lang syne?
Welcome, everyone, to the second most illustrious night of the year, the most distinguished night of the year. Welcome to a very special giant size edition of the Hard Traveling Fanboys as we look back at 2016, the year in review. And with me, of course, as always, is my colleague, who is getting a little close to me right now in our studios in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. A little uncomfortably close. Nick Duke. Nick!
Well, you know, usually we sit on opposite sides of the ultra-luxurious Vancouver, British Columbian studios, but this time I decided to snuggle right up and, you know, see what's going on.
Yeah, he's definitely seeing what's going on right now. But obviously, in the case of a giant size, and certainly for a year like 2000...
It's not that giant size, Greg. I hate to break it.
For a 2016 that has been somewhat unique in nature, as some might say, we thought we would be joined by some of our dearest colleagues and friends here at Place to Be Nation Pop. First of all, coming to us from the state capital of our state of Alabama, Russell Sellers, the host of Sellers Points. How are you doing, Russell?
Doing good, fellas. Doing good. Thanks for bringing us all the way back to Vancouver. It's cold in Alabama, but man, it's really cold here. And it does look like things are a little on the short side on that side of the table.
They always are with Greg and I.
Yes, that's correct. That's correct. Especially in the cold weather. So
that is true. But man, it must be extra cold up here today.
That it is. Jennifer Smith making her hard traveling giant size debut. Jennifer, how are you doing, ma'am?
I'm good. I like things giant size, so I'm excited about it.
Well, then you will be sadly disappointed with Greg and I on this evening, but you know, we do what we can.
Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. And coming to us from the West Coast, our old companion, the man that edits our shows, the MVP of Place to Be Nation Pop, Todd Weber. How you doing, Todd?
I resent the fact that you called me your old companion.
I was wondering if that was going to draw a response or not.
Yeah.
Unlike Nick, I didn't mean it as a pot shot, though.
I didn't say any such thing.
Anyway, it's great to be here. Thank you for having me back.
Absolutely. Absolutely, Todd. We appreciate you being
Todd,
on.
Todd dripping with sincerity right there. I love it.
And speaking of dripping with sincerity, Nick, tell everybody out there in listening land, listener land, if you will, Larry land even, tell everyone out there that's listening right now exactly what the premise of this show is.
So, as Greg said, we've had something of a unique 2016 here in the world of comics, and so the idea is not really to do an award show or any kind of best of list, but just kind of a general discussion about the biggest stories of 2016, in our view anyway, and just kind of a look back at the year that was. And we got a great, you know, range of perspectives here on the show today from, I mean, Todd, who, you know, obviously has a ton of knowledge and history with a lot of, you know, comics characters and concepts. And then we have Jennifer, who's kind of a newer comics reader. And then we got you, myself, and Russell smack dab in the middle where we like to be. So I think we're going to have a good time.
It's an impressive sandwich.
It is an impressive sandwich. That's true.
And meaty.
Very meaty.
When Greg and I are in the middle, yes, it's always very
That's
meaty.
Right. That's right. We look a little bit like 80s Lex Luthor. But in any event, we're going to get started right away. We've got the show divided into three segments, one focusing on movies, one focusing on television, one focusing on comics themselves. We're going to get started with the movies right now. And it was a jam-packed year full of comic book movies. I mean, one of the most packed years we've had in a while. And it got started towards the beginning of the year with probably the biggest surprise hit of the year, I would say, which was Fox's Deadpool. The Ryan Reynolds vehicle ended up making a ton of money at the box office. And as an R-rated movie, no less, an R-rated superhero film, pretty unprecedented the kind of success that it had. And so looking back at the success of that, what kind of, we're looking at $760 million made at the box office for this R-rated film. What do you think, if anything, the impact of Deadpool is going to be on superhero films going forward? Nick, let's start with you.
Well, I mean, clearly, I think it's already having an impact. I don't think there's any chance, personally, that Logan would have eventually gotten that R rating that it's going to have when it opens in March without the success of Deadpool. I think it really showed that you can do something more adult-themed and have it, you know, toe that line a little bit with the violence and the profanity and the somewhat unique sexuality of Deadpool as well, and may it still be very commercially profitable, which has always been the concern for R-rated films. So, I do worry a little bit that I think it will be tempting for studios to go for an R rating for things that probably don't need them. But at the same time, I can't complain too much when we're getting, you know, more. Ultimately, it's going to lead to more variety in our superhero films, which is always a good thing.
That's right. Variety is a good thing. And I was impressed by the movie's performance. Thought it was a really good movie in and of itself. And the kind of fourth wall breaking zaniness of it could also have an impact going forward. Russell, what were your thoughts on Deadpool, and what do you think the impact will be that it'll have, if anything, going forward?
It was hysterical. Like I said at the time, it was a very pleasant surprise that it turned out as well as it did, because it was one of those experiments. You know, it could have gone either way. This could have been them saying, "All right, well, we'll do action comedy. We will do Deadpool." In that fourth wall breaking tradition, and it was either going to go over as it did very, very, very well, or it was going to go over like a lead balloon, and the audience fully embraced it. Now, the biggest question mark, I think, isn't necessarily what impact is it going to have on the films going forward, but can Deadpool sustain its own success through future films? And the question there is, are they going to be able to keep it fresh? Are they going to be able to keep doing those things that they did before? Or is the sequel going to wind up feeling like just a rehash of the one that came before, which is always a danger when you have a massive surprise hit like that.
And already you can see a little bit of shakeup, you know, with the departure of the director, who I'm
Tim Miller.
Tim Miller, that's right. Yep.
And he, to his credit, he did address some of the stuff that was said about that recently, saying that the idea that he wanted to make this big superhero film, like this big budget superhero film, more in the vein of what you see over in the MCU, was ludicrous. That those accusations had no basis in reality. And fair enough, Tim. But yeah, he's still dodging the question about why he actually left. He just said that that wasn't the reason.
Somewhat unrelated note, but I just want to throw this out there. I learned recently, does anybody remember the absolutely amazing TV spot that was produced for Batman Arkham Origins that featured, like, basically a series of close-ups of Bruce's eyes as various, like, things happened to him throughout his life? Do you remember that TV spot?
I do not.
Anyway, if you go out and look for it, Tim Miller actually directed that that commercial. I did not know that until the other day. And so he's got an extensive work with CGI, and I would imagine he probably wanted to, you know, do something more visually stunning, since that is his background, but that's just me, you know.
If visually stunning is where he wants to go, and he does seem to have the pedigree for it. I'm just thinking Warner Brothers are going to throw out the idea of him directing Flash, but I'm sure we'll talk about that later.
And we will.
Todd, what about you? What were your thoughts on? I know you haven't really been a big Deadpool fan, but what were your thoughts on the movie's success? And do you think it'll have an impact on the industry going forward?
Gentlemen and lady, I am of two minds about Deadpool. I am pleasantly surprised that it was a very entertaining film. It was raunchy as heck. There was like things that I can't believe that I watched with my wife. I enjoyed the inclusion of Colossus. That's a better way to say that. And, you know, that's great. It was massively profitable. It wasn't made for very much money. It made tons and tons of money. But in a way, I think I was, as a devil's advocate kind of thing, hoping for it to not do as well, maybe be mediocre, maybe not make all of its money back. Because big picture, I would really like to see the X-Men do what Fox do with the X-Men, what Sony has done with Spider-Man. And I think Deadpool's success has said to Fox that, no, we can mine these still. There's still life in the X-Men characters. And so any chance of the Inhumans being replaced with mutants has gone away. So big picture-wise, I think it's a bad thing for me personally, but good for Ryan Reynolds. I mean, Ryan Reynolds has resurrected his career with this. He was not, hadn't done any big movies for a long time, and he went for it, and he's had the vision for Deadpool as a character, and he is that character. You read the comic, that's definitely what Ryan brought to the screen. And I don't know, I'm hoping that it's, when we have our sequel, Deadpool 2, that it is of a similar vein, where it's that frenetic energy, raunchy comedy, but I don't want them to necessarily retool the entire X-Men universe in that fashion. And I'm with movies like Logan, I don't think we are gonna.
Yeah, that's a great point, Tim, that I really had, or Todd, rather, not Tim. Tim's not here with us today, but we love you, buddy. But that is a point I hadn't considered about the fact that it's kind of now going to buoy the X-Men universe a little bit after kind of an underwhelming performance by Apocalypse at the theaters. Mm-hmm. So good point there. Jenny, what were your thoughts on Deadpool, and what do you think or hope will be its effect on future movies, whether it be the X-Men movies or whether it be just superhero movies in general?
I really loved it. I got to see it with some of you guys. It was a blast. Like Todd said, Ryan Reynolds just totally makes it for me. I love how he just fully embraced it. He kind of reminds me of Robert Downey Jr. He just kind of encapsulates that character, and he takes it even further in like the advertising and the marketing for the movie. And I really love him as Deadpool. I don't see how anybody else could ever pull it off. And going forward, I like it. I like the raunch. I like the violence. I like it all. I mean, just do more of that.
Gotcha. Yeah, no, that's another good point about how Reynolds has kind of, it, like Robert Downey Jr., is now intrinsically attached to that character. Kind of like, I mean, Robert Downey Jr. to Iron Man, and of course the guy who played Rorschach in Watchmen, Rorschach, is now indelibly associated with that character. So, good points all around, ladies and gentlemen. But about a month later, I think, maybe a month and a half later, we had another release come out that was highly anticipated and ended up being successful in its own way, but not successful with critics and not living up to the expectations of the studio, and that would be Batman v Superman, Dawn of Justice, which was followed up several months later by another film that did well financially, but did not, I think, meet critical expectations, which was Suicide Squad. So
I think divisive is the best term for both of these. Not, you know, when a Marvel film comes out, generally speaking, the fan base is kind of all on the same page, and we may differ on the degree to which we enjoy those films, but we all pretty much wind up liking or loving everyone that comes out. Whereas these, both of them, I mean, just had they had some fans for sure, but they also had, you know, a significant number of detractors as well.
Right, and we also saw some, as a result, direct result of some of these reviews, some of these declining box office numbers as the films were out. Geoff Johns was moved up to take over, kind of overseeing DC films. But unfortunately, the controversy didn't stop there, because then we saw The Flash, over the course of this past year, has lost, two directors?
Two directors,
now.
Yeah.
And the most recent being a guy who was pretty close to starting work on the film, Rick
Famuyiwa.
Famuyiwa, yes. He was very close to starting production on the film, and he dropped out. So it all asks the question of what what is the future of DC films right now? And honestly, I'm not sure that I know the answer to that. I don't actually think any of us do, but right now, Todd, I want to start with you on this one. As someone that's been there, kind of, we've talked about it, this going back several years, and it seems to me that we've constantly tried to give WB Studios the benefit of the doubt, and just one thing after another keeps happening. But what do you make of the move of Geoff Johns up the ladder? Do you think it can save the film division? Does it need saving? What do you think, Todd?
Well, I don't know if it's too late is the issue. I think you're throwing the baby out with the bathwater, perhaps. That you're starting at, I'm Captain Cliche today, but is the initial vision for the Justice League and the DCU so flawed that Geoff Johns can't save it? And I don't think that's necessarily the case, but it may be that the case in the public's perception, you know, with Man of Steel being a polarizing film. You know, I loved and hated the movie at the same time. We've talked about that before. And then they chose to release a inferior cut of Batman v Superman, yeah, when the extended edition redeemed the movie in a lot, mm-hmm, of people's eyes, including mine. I wish I had seen that version first.
Yep. It's the only version that should be seen by anyone.
Yeah, they should delete all copies of the original cut.
You hear that, Matt? Delete!
So, yeah, I am not optimistic. I also am lamenting the fact that Johns is not in day-to-day operations at DC Comics with this Rebirth thing, but I know he'll be back. I know he's still got one foot kind of dangling in the water over there, because we're going to see more of the Watchmen explanations of Rebirth happening here in the next year or so. But I'm more concerned, I think, about The Flash. You have Wonder Woman coming out, and it's going to kill. Wonder Woman's going to be a fantastic global success. I'm calling my shot right now. I think Justice League is going to be, I don't know what to think necessarily, because we still have Zack Snyder and Geoff Johns, and we'll see whose vision and whose success or whose execution wins out. I haven't totally loved everything I've seen from Justice League so far, but I do like that it has a funnier, lighter tone, but I don't know that Batman is the guy to be the funnier, lighter tone around.
Right.
And again, I keep coming back to The Flash. Why do people keep walking off The Flash? Is it because DC's vision for The Flash is much different than any creator's vision has been? Because the casting is terrible, has been pretty weak. Barry Allen is not a slacker kid, and that's the only thing we've seen from Ezra Miller, both in BBS and in the previews of Justice League. It seems like they're trying to just be. Zack Snyder has one version of him, and you know, with Geoff Johns, hopefully we can course correct a little bit. But my Barry Allen is on TV every week.
I can totally and agree on that one.
And millions of people watch him every week, and they're hoping to have that success with him as a screen character in movies. But they're going to try and do something totally different, and you know, perhaps corporate has screwed this up so much that nobody wants to work with DC Warner Brothers having such a strict structure in place over it. So,
and I think that's my biggest question. You know, we say that they want to do something different, but how different is it really going to be? I know, and you know, there are questions about the veracity of it, if it's actually true or not, but I don't know if you guys remember the purported leaked synopsis that came out of the film. That was essentially, based on the synopsis, they're retelling season one of The Flash. It was talking about Harrison Wells having a secret and, you know, Iris, and it pretty much sounded like they were going to be redoing season one just as a film, and I just don't know. That's my biggest thing with it, is since you have the TV show that is so successful, whatever the film does, I want it to be different. You know, like something that is not the television show, because if you give me, you know, a watered down or, you know, weak version of the TV show as a movie, that's just going to up the disappointment that they didn't just tie the TV universe into everything.
The issue is, though, you can make it a different movie, but you cannot make it a different character.
Right.
Because if you change the character too much, he's no longer Barry Allen.
Right.
And that's the...
Well, we've talked about that. My concern is even, like, based on the very little bit of footage I've seen, it seems to me more like they're doing more of a Wally West than they are a Barry Allen anyway.
They're doing more of a Bart.
or a Bart.
Well, Jenny, what are your thoughts on the current slate of DC movies? Where do you see it going, and is it something that you think needs to be course corrected, or is it something that you think they need to just stay the course with what they're doing?
It's kind of confusing for me because I did love Batman vs. Superman, the real version of it, and I super hated Suicide Squad. And those were like back to back, and it's confusing. There's so much potential with Flash, and I like Ezra Miller. I think that he could do it really well, and I'm like you. What's going on behind the scenes? Why is everybody walking off this? Is there like a Marvel mole or something in there? I don't know, but it seems like there's some sabotage afoot. I don't know. There's Geoff Johns, and he knows what he's doing. I mean, I don't see how he could make it worse. I could only hope that it could get better, and I totally agree. Wonder Woman is going to just kill it. Wonder Woman is going to be the best. I cannot wait for that one.
And it looks great. I mean, everything we've seen from Wonder Woman looks fantastic. And just to be pessimistic for a minute, though, everything we saw from Suicide Squad looked fantastic until the movie came out as well.
That's true. I remember talking about it. You know, we were like really kind of hyped for Suicide Squad, like overhyped.
We all were.
Yeah, and I was kind of hesitant, like, I don't know. And then it was terrible. Super terrible.
Yeah. And one thing I think we can all agree on at this point is there's practically no chance The Flash is making its March 2018 release date at this point. I don't see any way they could. With the level of, you know, post-production and VFX that are going to need to be done on a film like that, if they don't have a director and haven't started shooting, I don't see any way they're making March of 18.
I don't know that they have a final version of the script.
That's also a great point.
Russell, what are your thoughts on all of this? Where do you see the studio going, and what are some of the things that they can do to course correct?
Oh, I don't have an opinion.
we didn't save you for last on this one for a reason.
All good points, and looking at the situation with Flash, I can say that I share a lot of those same concerns. How much could be going on behind the scenes to produce two directors walking off? Now, first of all, Seth Graham Smith walking off the movie was probably doing us all a favor. Let's just be honest right now. But losing Rick...
I mean, a big-budget action movie is not where you want to make your directorial debut. There's so much that goes into that, and the headaches. I'm kind of like you. I don't sit here and wring my hands over the Seth Graham Smith decision, but the Famo Yuen thing, because it was the second time. I think that's the big thing.
That it was the second time, and that it was him. Right. Because I was really hyped about him taking on the job. I was like, okay, we're rolling now. This sounds great. And I do have to say, though, if there's any truth, and I don't know if there is, but if there's any truth to the idea that he wanted to make a quote-unquote edgier film than what Geoff Johns and his cohort in DC Films, John Berg, wanted to make, then that would give me pause for a moment and say, okay, maybe there was a reason for him to part ways, because this would be his first big budget film, because he's only done small stuff up to now. And if he was trying to make an edgier film while they're trying to quote unquote course correct, Greg, I think you said this on an episode of Hard Travel Fanboys not too long ago, that it's time to make that safe but good picture. And if you're going to make one of these movies into that, it needs to be The Flash.
I don't give a damn about safe at this point. I just want good. I want a DC movie to come out, and I want everyone to generally, for the most part, be impressed by the final product. And we haven't had that yet. I mean,
I think
going back to what I think, even The Dark Knight Rises has some level of controversy about it. So really, if you think about it, when is the last like universally enjoyed DC film? The Dark Knight would have to be.
Yeah,
that's
right.
Going on. I mean,
that's true.
Eight years ago at this point,
That's true. And my larger point, though, is that when you make one of these movies, like the DC and Warner Brothers have swung for the fences on the edgy side of things and have missed quite a bit. I mean, as someone who, like, I agreed with you guys and Todd that the superior version of Batman v Superman was the Ultimate Edition. The theatrical cut is like a 2 out of 5 for me. The Suicide Squad.
You seem to have modified your opinion a bit since WrestleMania, Russell.
Well, yeah, I have. Haven't you been listening to my podcast, man? Haven't you been listening to the Hard Traveling Fanboys? We've talked about this.
I'm a couple weeks behind, but I mean,
you're a couple months behind.
Don't you edit these?
I do. I do.
I can speak for myself, and I'm sure Russell would agree that, like, my opinion of the theatrical movie, of the theatrical cut, it started to change after I saw it the second time, but when it really shifted was once I saw the ultimate cut and saw, like, what the movie could have been.
Yeah.
Precisely.
It cast that theatrical cut in such a negative light at that point. I mean, like, the theatrical cut, honestly, once you've seen the ultimate cut, it doesn't make sense. Like, the movie, like, from a plot standpoint, just doesn't hold together.
Well, that raises a question in the interest of fairness. Is there any chance, I haven't seen, I don't know if anybody else here has, is there any chance that the extended cut of Suicide Squad fixes that movie?
Nope.
I haven't seen it, so.
I'm just saying no, because they added maybe 15 minutes to the movie, but it's not additional footage that would help that movie. They would have to completely restructure it. And take out a lot of the weird.
Have a second act.
Yeah, yeah. Have a second act would be good. And 15 minutes ain't a second act. That's that's basically background information on Harley and Joker, which seems to be what they've added to the movie. And hey, fair enough.
I was going to say, isn't it all like mostly Leto stuff that they added back in?
That's what I understand it to be too. I haven't seen it, but that's what I hear from people who have, is that it's mostly that. And I'm like, okay, well, fair enough. I did want to see Jared Leto's actual Joker performance, but you still didn't fix the biggest problems that the movie had, which, like we have just said, if you don't add a second act to that movie, it's still the same thing. You're not really getting a different product. And what I see, but going back to the original topic, what I see about the of DC films, and as far as like course correcting goes, I share some of the same worries that Greg has, and Greg has mentioned this on other podcasts before, that Warner Brothers and DC has this tendency to overcorrect, and that's something that I really don't want them to do. Like the worst case scenario to me would be they spend all this time restructuring and trying to get Flashback on track only to give us the 2011 Green Lantern Redux. That would just...
At least we'd get Angela Bassett's Dr. Evil suit back.
We would get that, and then we would get... I think at that point, the big old reboot button would just have to be pressed in earnest. But I hope that doesn't happen, because looking at the trailers for Wonder Woman, as has been said by everyone so far, yeah, looks absolutely fantastic. And I think this is where the rubber's going to meet the road. Jeff Johns and John Berg were promoted right around the time that movie started really coming together. Jeff Johns co-wrote the story and the script for the film. So his hands are directly in the food, if you will. He's the chef in the kitchen. He is officially the guy who's helping to put this all together. He's no longer just standing back, not being listened to, as he has been in several other DC films cases. And this, I think, is going to be this and Justice League are going to be his proving grounds. Does Jeff Johns make a difference? We're going to find out, very, very soon.
And see, I'm not even really going to hold. I don't know what Justice League is going to be. I have no idea if it's going to be successful or
nor do I
together or be you know beloved. But I'm not even going to hold Jeff Johns accountable for that one, because, like Todd was saying, I think it's so clear at this point that whatever Zack Snyder's vision of these characters is not necessarily in line with Jeff Johns. And so I'm almost willing to give him, like, a pass on that one preemptively, which is probably a little bit too kind for a studio that hasn't really earned such a thing.
And fair enough. I look at Justice League, what little we've actually seen of it so far, and say that I'm in show me mode with that movie because I know that Zack Snyder could make a good superhero movie. For my money, he did it with Man of Steel, and with the Ultimate Edition of Batman v Superman. And I say that, okay, well, he tried to give the studio what they wanted, which was to introduce Batman, Wonder Woman, all these concepts into one movie, and he created a 3-hour epic, and then it got butchered before it went to theaters. But as far as Justice League goes, this isn't just proving ground for Zack. This is also Chris Terrio flying solo. David Goyer is no longer in the picture. He was at least mostly or partially responsible for Batman v Superman. And Terrio was just there to basically bat cleanup. This is Terrio flying solo. So how's this going to work? It's all a big question mark. Now, I will say that I feel a little bit more confident in Ezra Miller as a performer, as Barry Allen as the Flash, than maybe others do. I've seen a little bit more of his work, and I think the guy is versatile. I've read and seen interviews with him talking about the Flash, and he has immersed himself in this character. And when he mentions that Geoff Johns has been on set every day talking to him about what makes Barry Allen a great character and things to do and, more importantly, things not to do, that gives me a little bit more confidence that this has the potential to work out. Will it? I don't know. It's after Batman v Superman's theatrical cut, and especially after Suicide Squad, it's hard to walk in confident, but I'm going to sit back and say, okay, show me something good. Show me something cool, be it something that's darker toned, which I don't think that Wonder Woman or Justice League is necessarily going to be, or be it, you know, lighter. I will say that both trailers for Wonder Woman have me very well excited. I think it's going to open very well. But like the other movies, word of mouth will spread fast. And I think that if Wonder Woman fails critically and then Justice League doesn't hit big, there may be more than a restructuring happening. There may be a seismic shift in the DC world, which may mean a lot of these plans that they've been talking about don't go forward.
Right. Well, you mentioned word of mouth spreads quickly. It definitely worked for Ludacris back in the early 2000s. So
that was a good album.
We can only hope that it holds up now. Well, speaking of question marks, we have a big question mark about the future of the DC Comics-based films. But let's start off, or let's end this segment up with a lightning round. This will be just quick, short answers, and anybody that's been on this before knows how this works. We're going to start off with favorite comic book movie of 2016. Todd?
Doctor Strange.
Russell?
Civil War.
Jennifer?
Civil War.
Nick?
Civil War.
And Civil War for me as well. And finally, to wrap up the movie round, most anticipated comic book movie of 2017. Todd?
Homecoming.
Russell?
Logan.
Jennifer?
Wonder Woman.
Nick?
Spider-Man Homecoming.
Logan for me. And that wraps up the movie portion of our show. And from there, we're going to transition on to a platform that comic books are dominating right now, and that would be television. Whether you look across the major networks, whether you look across the cable networks, lots of comic book properties right now on television. And we're going to start with the most popular of those properties on television right now, and that would be AMC's The Walking Dead. It has been a ratings juggernaut for years now, but there are some signs that may be beginning to change. It's still doing really well. It's still, you know, one of the highest rated shows on cable, maybe the highest rated show on cable, I don't know. But it seems like everything dates back to last season, and some controversial storytelling techniques that were used, shall we say. Pretty much the entire season, there was the controversial fake Glenn death at the beginning of the season, where they kind of, in all intents and purposes, they showed Glenn's death on screen for the most part. and left it ambiguous for several weeks. Felt like about five or six episodes.
Yeah, and it was a whole an exercise in audience misdirection to the point where they even took his name out of the opening credits. Mm-hmm. You know, which was intended specifically to
even did an episode where Maggie dealt with
the idea
that Glenn is dead.
Yeah,
then only to reveal that he was alive. Only to later end the season with a cliffhanger that had been built to by the producers of the show for weeks and weeks and months on end to be the moment that people could not miss because they were going to be just emotionally wrecked by it, and then nothing happened.
Yep.
And it seemed like over the course of the summer, anticipation built.
We got the James Bond blood splatter at the end. That's what we got running down the face.
The Roger Moore era James Bond. Yeah.
Right.
But for the record, Nick and I have both been very high on this season. But the question is, for the panel, your thoughts on the cliffhanger technique that they utilized, and for those of you who have seen. Into this season, your ideas for why the ratings might be dipping a little bit this year. Now, I'm going to start with you, Russell, because I know you haven't actually watched this season yet. I don't even know if you've watched last season yet, but what are your thoughts on the... I know you've kept up with everything. What are your thoughts on the interesting relationship between The Walking Dead and its audience throughout last season?
Disclaimer, I have not watched season 6, and I haven't watched any of season 7 other than a few clips online, but I am aware of the things that happen because I don't mind being spoiled as far as Walking Dead goes.
There was no way to avoid it. Like,
there wasn't.
The who did Negan kill thing took over the internet for what seemed like 4 months. I mean, it was insane.
I went ahead of the curve. I just asked people who were watching it. I was like, okay, who did he kill? All right, fine. I was like, I didn't, honestly.
Fine, like this.
Yeah, exactly. I was like, precisely. I was just having some beans and some sugar cubes, and I was happy with it. And as I'm looking at the situation as it is, that mid-season cliffhanger about Glenn possibly being eaten by zombies, but turns out he rolled under the dumpster.
Magic dumpster.
That was about the moment where I wondered, should I even bother with this show anymore? Because I felt like that was just bad storytelling. It was almost like season 6 was the producers and the writers of the show saying, how much can we fuck with our own audience before they turn on us? How far can we push them?
It's very WWE-esque in that regard, I guess.
It is. It has a lot in common.
Frankly, you'll take what I shovel you and you'll like it.
Basically, that's what I felt about that. I mean, I hadn't even watched the season up to that point, but seeing that, I was like, this really seems like they're just trying to mess with everybody at this point. And to me, it felt like a jumping the shark moment. But for a lot of other people, maybe it didn't, because they kept right on watching. And when it came back, boom, ratings were right back. They were right back in it all the way to the end. Now, I will say that I don't have as big a problem with the idea. Now, I haven't seen it in execution, but I don't have as big a problem with the season finale of 6 with Negan coming out and he kills someone, but you don't know who it is until the next season, because, frankly, Walking Dead ain't the first show to do that. There are many, many shows that have come before that did that same thing. Now, it would have been messed up if they did that, and that was the series finale. That would have been... Which has happened plenty of times, because shows got surprisingly canceled, but at that point, they knew full well they were coming back for season 7, and the audience knew they were going to come back, because you look at the ratings for that premiere episode, through the roof. And they even did one better, because they didn't wait till the end of the episode to tell you who died. Even though I said on Twitter as it was happening, I was like, wait a second. They haven't told y'all who died yet after the first commercial break. I bet they make y'all wait all the way to the end. And then they shocked me. They didn't. They went ahead and told you who did it or who died. And I'm like, okay, I wasn't expecting two people. So that was a bit of a surprise. The reasoning seems sound. I like I said, I haven't watched this this season yet, but I will. I'm going to go back and watch season 6 on Netflix because that's what I do, and I'll eventually get around to 7. But as far as it being like a big factor for me, it's really not. It doesn't bother me in the same way that it did other folks, but I can absolutely see why that Glenn death, or that fake Glenn death when he rolled under the dumpster. I wasn't even watching the show and I felt angry. So I get that one. It's just the one after it that I was like, why are people this upset?
Yeah, I think for me, I was one of the people very upset about the season finale, and the reason for me is that they had done the Glenn thing earlier, because I was willing, as stupid as that was, I was like...
No, okay, I get that. Yeah. That I get. Yeah. That totally makes sense.
It was just another example in a, like Greg was saying, it was a series of things throughout the season, in season 6, that just really felt like the entire show had become an exercise in audience manipulation. With the major point, you know, being the fake out Glenn death. And then when you get to the season finale and they do it again, it's like, how many times am I going to sit here and actually put up with this? You know?
It's like, well,
it's like being in an abusive relationship almost.
Right. And the producers had built the finale up to such, to
right.
indicating that there was some sense of finality that was just going to crush people. And I'm all for the off season cliffhanger. My favorite Simpsons season finale was the Who Shot Mr. Burns. So, I'm totally into that. Jennifer, you're the biggest Walking Dead fan that I know. What were your thoughts on the controversies from last season? And if anything, what do you think the reasoning is for the ratings dipping a little bit this year?
Well, with the fake Glenn death thing, I mean, it was annoying as shit, but most people I know didn't buy it anyway. So it was like, you know, whatever. With the cliffhanger, I was kind of pissed off about. They could have at least showed his face. You know what I'm saying? Show Negan bust him in the face and then go to, you know, cut it off or whatever. They could have done that. I remember having a discussion with some friends about, you know, who did we think it was going to be? And somebody said, watch him, you know, cliffhang us and not show us who he kills. And I said, if they do that, then Donald Trump will win the election. So I could see a
prophetic words.
Damn it, Jenny.
I know, right? So I'm blaming all of that on them.
on a related note, I just found out that apparently Scott Gimple's wife has been tapped for a position in Trump's administration.
Really?
Yeah. Continuing the WWE link, as we just made the analogy.
Wow. So,
I think that's gonna be interesting.
But the premiere was amazing. I mean, Negan is the fucking man. I know a lot of people that don't like him, but I don't get it. I mean, he's amazing. I think he brings a whole new dimension to the show. Mm-hmm. I don't even watch the show, and I haven't for a while, for zombie shit. Most people don't. But those people that do, and this is where I think the ratings part comes in, the people that are watching the show for the zombie stuff, they're like, whatever, what the hell is up with this Negan guy, and they don't get it. And, you know, they don't care about the psychological, you know, things that Negan likes to do. They just want to see Daryl with his crossbow, or, you know, they're just not growing, I don't think, with the show. And they're not interested in what's doing.
They just want to see Carl eat pudding.
That's all. And
who doesn't really?
I mean, that's
something. That's a good point, Jennifer. Because I have seen a baffling number of people who are complaining about when are the zombies going to come back to The Walking Dead, and it's like, really? That's why you were watching the show all these years, was to see zombies? I mean, they're pretty one dimensional, actually.
And I've seen a bizarre number of reviewers, like professional reviewers, who have major issues with like Jeffrey Dean Morgan as Negan. Maybe not his portrayal, but the writing of the character and how present he has been in the season. And to me, like, Negan has been the number one reason for me why the show has bounced back in a big way. And so it's
just
interesting to see the big divide and that it seemingly has happened here in the show's fan base, where so many people are liking what they're doing and so many people are seemingly, you know, being turned away. And I think the ratings thing at this point, I'm assuming it has to be a response to season six. Like, I think it's people who are just tuning them out for whatever reason and not giving them that opportunity anymore,
right,
to redeem
people that maybe feel that they can't buy into the drama anymore because they feel they're just going to be screwed over in the end.
Exactly.
There is also, which I don't have an issue with because I'm enjoying this season tremendously, but there is that element of people who feel that the show has been lacking in hope spots, so to speak, in terms of...
That it's very oppressive.
Very oppressive, and there haven't really been many opportunities to see even any hope of overcoming the Negan issue. And I guess I get that. I'm good with it because I think the show needs a strong villain, and I haven't had one since the Governor.
And I've seen some things that people are taking issue with the brutality of Negan in particular. I mean, you've watched 6 years of
what do you think the show is at this point?
Honestly, it just baffles me. I don't understand.
And he's a villain. Like,
what's he supposed to do?
They were all good with decapitated Herschel.
Exactly.
Yeah. Exactly. Exactly.
Oh. I think it's because Negan just smiles so much. He just grins so much. He is just relishing how fucking terrible he is. And he just takes such delight in it. And
good.
I don't know, people are...
It's a similar thing to the Joker in The Killing Joke.
Exactly.
He does terrible things, but he is a villain. You are not supposed to like this person. Like, bad people do bad things. That is the fundamental, like, one of the fundamental storytelling elements of comic books and comic book related.
No Man's Land had the Joker shoot a baby and smile about it.
That's right.
I would like to ask those people how they would feel about Negan suddenly doing a 180 and suddenly being like, I feel so terrible about all the things I've done. Really? Really? Would that work for anybody? Ever? No. No, you'd be like, well, worst villain on TV ever.
And I'll tell you this right now, if they do it, they got a chance to make Negan the biggest baby face on television if he could just take Lucille and ran it across that terrible haircut of Carl, just straight down the hairline.
I actually think that would be more divisive than you think, because I am shocked at the number of Carl fans that are out there.
If or when that happens, I'm making you guys a promise right now. The ensuing episode of the Hard Traveling Fanboys is opening with Daniel Bryan's theme music and me just screaming, yes, 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 into the microphone.
Will you do it as Dusty?
Sure, absolutely.
Because I want to hear yes, yes.
Speaking of Carl's hair, has anyone noticed that Carl's hair is kind of, as he ages, it's kind of taking on the shape of Darth Vader's head?
Yes, it is.
That's because he's a giant dick.
Come on now. Todd, what do you make? You watch The Walking Dead, I believe. What do you make of this season so far, and what did you make of it, especially compared to last season?
Well, I think there are a lot of good things and bad things going on with the show. Negan's performance, the performance of Jeffrey Dean Morgan as Negan, has been stellar. It may be a little bit different than what I expected from reading the character in the compendiums. I read the big, thick Walking Dead books, and so I'm a little behind. I've only read the first two, but Negan in the comics is a little stouter, a little less gleeful, perhaps. You know, he's still sadistic, but Jeffrey Dean Morgan's having a blast, and I'm really enjoying his portrayal of Negan in the show. But structurally and narratively, there are problems with the show. There are four or five episodes where we don't see certain characters, and so we lose track of what's going on.
That's a great point.
True.
That's a great point.
And that's, unless you're binge watching, which, you know, a lot of people will do, they'll wait for Netflix at the next summer, right? Because summertime is when Walking Dead drops on Netflix.
Pretty much.
Perhaps people would watch, you know, they'll watch that first one and then, okay, I'm good. I'll catch up with it next summer. The other thing I think is going on is that a lot of us nerds have a new master on Sunday nights now. Its name was Westworld.
Hell yeah.
Oh, that's a good point.
I watched Westworld, and then I would watch Walking Dead on Monday night, because Westworld, I was more concerned. There were more, you know, it's a debut season. It was very compelling. There were all these mysteries and threads on Reddit where we'd talk about, well, what's going on? What's this conspiracy? What's this hidden reveal? What's this theory you might have? And so Westworld became a bigger pop phenomenon for me. So I would watch that, and that would get my... I would defer the watching of Walking Dead so that I could catch up on Westworld and watch that when it dropped on Sunday nights. So I think a lot of
frankly,
America,
pal, there's something else you could be watching on Monday nights.
Yeah, Yeah, I don't get home in time Super for the girl. Live raw. Yeah. So and that brings up an interesting point. I'm a cord cutter. Anybody else doing cord cutting right now?
Yep.
In this panel?
I am.
Yes. So how are you watching your CW shows, Russ?
The CW app.
Me too. So it's the next day.
Yep, it is the next day. Actually, I don't even do it the next day anymore because I don't really have so much stuff going on during the week that I don't get a chance to watch it even 24 hours later. But I have found a pretty solid method of avoiding spoilers. So I just today was watching Flash and Arrow from earlier this week. And I still haven't watched the mid-season finale of Legends of Tomorrow, but I'll probably get to that later tonight. But that's what I do now is I watch them on the weekends because of that app.
Yeah, and I've been a cord cutter for years. I would buy Walking Dead on iTunes, and so I'd watch that. It would drop the next day on Mondays. But I got Sling TV on Apple TV, so I get to watch same night, you know, as though I have cable. It's a cheaper option. So I just think a lot of people, ratings are measured by who's watching at the time. I think still a greater number of people are cord cutting. They're watching it a night later. They're watching it on iTunes, and they're pirating the shows too. So I think just as many people are watching just later.
Yeah. Certainly the buzz hasn't died down on social media this season. But I think that you hit on something that was a great point there, Todd, which is that the multiple episodes that you go without seeing the quote-unquote
yep.
main team of characters, that has to have an impact. I mean, for instance, I think about the Tara episode.
Tara and Dr. Dre. Yeah, I forgot all about them.
Yeah, I did too. Like as I said on the show, I forgot that Tara and Dr. Dre were off in the RV. Like I still don't know that character's name, by the way, so I'm just calling him Dr. Dre. I like Dr. Dre.
Yeah, you're right.
Anyway, they just were like off in the RV, and literally until they were doing the previously on The Walking Dead and showed them, I was like, I was just assuming they were in Alexandria, like, because I had completely forgotten about that subplot.
And it's like, I think that the show has kind of taken on that path in recent seasons where I remember when they first did the group splitting up after the prison, I thought it was really cool. And it was like, okay, this is a nice slowdown for the show and allows us to focus on who these individual characters are. Well, now the central group has expanded so much.
Right.
They feel the need to give everyone character development. And in the process, they lose the stream of the main characters that people are invested in.
We haven't seen Carol and Morgan in, what, like five?
Since episode two or three.
Yeah, right. Yeah. And I think it's difficult, unless you're binge-watching, I think it's difficult for the week-to-week viewer to keep track of everything that's going on when you don't have that refresher periodically.
Right. But all that being said, I am enjoying the season. I think the episodes have, for the most part, been very strong. But we'll see how it rebounds ratings wise in the second half. Still doing very well. It's not like it's plummeting off.
We're not on the verge of cancellation or anything. But there is, you know, there was a time when The Walking Dead was out was getting more viewers than Sunday Night Football, than the NFL, which is like the biggest ratings thing there is on television.
Although even their ratings are
right. Even their ratings are down a little bit. Yeah. So I mean that period of time where it was not just the hottest show, but the hottest thing on television. Period. I think that has kind of started to subside a little bit.
Well, I'm glad that Russell brought up watching the CW shows this week, because that's a great transition into our next topic. Speaking of the CW, the show that started it all with the CW was Arrow. It launched in, I believe, 2012. Is that correct?
Yep.
I think that's right.
And, it's true.
When it launched, it kind of changed the game and opened the door for The Flash, for Legends of Tomorrow, and even for Supergirl, which moved over to the CW this year. Well, speaking very similar to The Walking Dead, Arrow had a very shaky last season. Season 4 of Arrow started strong, but kind of lost steam as it went along and made some decisions that upset a lot of viewers along the way. And in the off-season, if you will, the producers, in a rare move, actually seemed to acknowledge that Season 4 was a misstep and recommitted to bringing the show, quote, back to its roots, back to basics, and going more street level with it. And so season 5 of Arrow seems to be doing much better critically, getting better reviews. The ratings are up for it. So, Nick, let's start with you on this one. What has been the... has there been an improvement in Arrow? And if so, what can you pinpoint it on?
I mean, it's a rare case of the writers and the producers actually, you can believe what they're saying, because it's clear that they heard the response to season four and possibly even felt a little, you know, felt somewhat like the fan base did while they were making it. And I think it's clear that that back to basics approach is something they've really taken to heart, because with the obvious exception of the Heroes versus Aliens crossover that was way out there, they really have done more street level storytelling this year. They've kind of refocused the show back around Oliver, whereas at times last season it there were episodes that didn't really feel like they were about Oliver.
It was more about the company than Oliver.
Right.
And they forgot at times that Oliver was the main character.
Right. And they've gotten back to that here in this season. And, you know, just in general, I think the writing has been stronger. The plotting has been stronger. The performances, as always, you know, continue to be good across the board. But I think the biggest thing, the biggest improvement by far from season four to season five, since Arrow debuted, the flashbacks have been a part of the show. Season four was the first season where anytime a flashback happened, I felt like I wanted to change the channel. Like, episodes that were going well would grind to screeching halts for those god-awful flashbacks in season four. The flashbacks in season five are some of the best flashbacks they've done. Probably the best flashbacks they've done since season two with the Slade stuff.
Yeah.
The flashbacks are working in a big way, so it feels like the show as a whole is up now, because that whole little element of the show is back up to par. And also, for a lot of people, I don't agree with this. You know, I'm a vocal fan of Olicity, so to speak, but there are a lot of people who are pleased that the show isn't so heavily focused on Oliver and Felicity's romantic relationship anymore. I know that was a point of contention for a large portion of the fan base.
Also, we cannot undersell the addition of Dolph Lundgren to the cast. And I, for one, am hoping to see more of Dolph Lundgren in the second half of
Of course,
the,
you can't oversell the addition of Wild Dog, who,
yes,
you know, maybe we can work out some sort of trade where Wild Dog goes over to the Walking Dead
and crosses Negan at some point.
Yep, yeah, you could tie him and Carl back to back, and then just maybe with one swing, you might be able to get them both. If you come down from the top, I think you could do it.
Or if you're a Braves hitter, you miss them both.
That's true. That's a great point.
Anyway, Russell, what are your thoughts on Arrow? Do you feel like it's rebounded from last year? And if so, how?
It's very much rebounded, thanks largely to the much stronger flashbacks, which I guess we all didn't really appreciate how much impact they have until we were getting crappy ones. And
yeah, good point.
And then, you know, because there was a time whenever we talked about how long can they really keep this formatting up, where half the episode is told in flashback to, like, some years ago, to before Oliver became the Arrow, to, you know, half the episode being in modern day. And I think that this season has really upped the game. Like, it's their strongest statement with flashbacks they've made since, as Nick said, since season two. All the stuff with Bratva, the whole Russian angle, it really works. And it sucks that season four was so lackluster, and that all of the flashbacks really were just a poor way of setting up this Russian angle with the girl and her brother, who ultimately the flashbacks served no other purpose than that. And they could have done that in one episode, which they basically did. And I feel like this season has really upped its game in the present day stuff as well, because we've talked about this before. I am also a shipper of Oliver and Felicity. I felt like they had this great chemistry together. It all just worked. And it was the relationship that truly felt organic. It felt like it was built out of almost like a happy accident. Like, maybe they didn't intend that to happen, but it flowed. It just worked, and it worked for a lot of people who were watching the show. And
it flowed like an Arrow relationship is supposed to flow.
It did. But Greg and I have also talked about this before, because they did the CW thing with it, which is to say they did the will they, won't they dance, especially through season three and even worse in season four.
Well, they just walked it back all the way.
They,
you know, it's like cake and eat it too.
And this,
yeah, they walked it all the way back and have it. That's the one criticism I have of this season. They haven't really explained how they just walked it back. It's like at the end of season four, there's clearly a whole lot of tension there, and it's just being ignored for the most part in season five. That's my biggest. If I had to have a complaint about season five, that would be the one.
And fair enough criticism, but for me, it's It's like I had mentioned this to Greg before. It's shit or get off the pot. It's do this or don't. Basically what they, if you're going to split them up, fine. But commit. Don't do the back and forth dance. No more of that. And
have a reasonable reason for them to split, right, as opposed to what they did last year, which is have Felicity turn into a completely different character
for an extended period of time. Yeah.
And this season, like, especially, I know we'll probably talk about this in a minute, but the mid-season finale for Arrow, I felt was one of the strongest moments for Emily as a in her role as Felicity. I thought that she really brought it in the performance side, and it felt like old Felicity again, but in the modern day, not just in the flashback scenes.
Yep.
And that made my heart very happy to see that again. And of course, the one other thing that I'd like to point out about this season of Arrow versus last season is that the action scenes in this season are far better than they were last season, which, man, you go back and watch that season finale from season 4 and tell me that wasn't one of the worst pieces of shit you ever seen in your life.
Oh, yeah. I mean, Oliver using magic that is powered through the power of belief and hope or whatever the fuck it was.
Yeah.
Like, that was the season 4 of Arrow. I mean, like, there was some good stuff, but especially towards the end, it just fizzled out.
Not that he wanted Damian Dark dead. It's that he wanted him not to be alive anymore.
Yeah, it was a complete turd. That season finale was one of the worst things I've ever watched. I mean, the fight scene was a total of them hit me in the face. All right, now I hit you in the face. Now I hit you in the face.
What about the giant army of people who are like, in my head, they're just standing around the corner and one guy's like peeking, like, are they there yet? Are they there? Oh yeah, there they are. Come on, guys, let's go.
And we're supposed to believe that
I think one guy actually says, yeah, let's get him.
He really did.
He should turn himself in.
It was totally that moment. It was that moment. And I do have to say, though, that this season, speaking of Dark Knight, this season is actually pulling from the Dark Knight playbook for both of its major villains so far. Church and Prometheus have both been very Joker-esque in their methodology. I mean, they're...
Or even Adrian Chase, very Harvey Dent.
He is.
I think, in his relationship.
He's channeling him some Aaron Eckhart by more than a little bit. So, and I might criticize a show for doing that, but in this particular case, I feel like it's been to Arrow's strength to do that. Like it has elevated the show to be what it always could have been by looking at another street level vigilante that also did the same thing or did very similar things.
Well, we've seen that before. We had the Ra's al Ghul 70s homage to Batman in season 3. So, I mean, they're not above taking from that paradigm, if you will.
The DC on CW universe, to me, has always... I've always kind of viewed it through the prism of they don't have Superman and Batman.
Yes, they do.
But they have Flash and Arrow, and those are their stand-ins, you know? So that's kind of the way I've always looked at it.
They kind of have Superman now, kind of.
Kind of, right, on Earth 38 or whatever it is.
Yeah.
Speaking of that, Todd, what are your thoughts on Arrow? Where did it go wrong in season 4, and have they corrected that in season 5?
Well, season 4 had bad Flash. And it also had one bad thing named Katie Cassidy as Laurel Lance. And
yes.
So all three of those things are gone now. So just addition by subtraction. I mean, it's amazing how much better a performance that the statue at the City Hall is given than Katie Cassidy is. So.
Oh.
And that being said, I am about three episodes behind. Actually, I'm four episodes behind.
Oh, okay.
I have not seen the crossover. The next episode I have to watch is the first big Prometheus one.
I don't want to spoil too much for you, but I will say this: enjoy your lack of Katie Cassidy while you still can.
Oh, great! Oh man. So, but I have enjoyed what I've seen of Prometheus. I enjoyed Chad Coleman as Church.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
great to have another Walking Dead crossover that wasn't the Bug-Eyed Bandit. So real, and I loved Cody Rhodes, Cody Runnels in his
Was great.
Where he was manufacturing the Stardust drug. That was kind of cool. So without being annoying, and I've also liked the training of a brand new team. I don't mind Wild Dog as much. I think there's, you know, he may eventually. We may never get over how weak the acting and the idea that they're his scrappiness, but. I still like we have this kind of diverse team that with new guys, especially Ragman. That's been a kind of surprise. I had no idea they were bringing him in this year, and so that was a early comic I really enjoyed back the old Joe Kubert days. So Mr. Terrific's been good, and the betrayal of Artemis was not necessarily surprising, given that we've seen that character be morally ambiguous before earlier. So yeah, Arrow's return to form. I'm only behind on it compared to the other shows. Because we don't watch Arrow as a family. Corey and I tend to watch Arrow late at night because there's a lot more killing and shooting and we have a 7 and a 10-year-old who will watch Flash and Legends of Tomorrow with us, and sometimes Supergirl when Maggie Sawyer's not on. Because we're not ready for that talk just yet.
Well, speaking of the crossover episode... that was a really successful in drawing in new viewers to these shows, each of the shows. And actually, I'm getting ahead of myself a little bit here. Jennifer, we haven't gotten your thoughts on Arrow yet. What were your thoughts on season 4 of Arrow and thus far on season 5 of Arrow?
Well, I mean, I think Todd just made the perfect point about Laurel's statue. I don't know how I can follow that. No, I seriously still love Arrow. You know, season 4 is not my favorite, but things are better, except for I still want Oliver and Felicity together. I just still do, and I always will. I can see what they're trying to do. They're trying to both move on. They have too much chemistry. Like, even when they're trying to not have them together, even in every scene that they have, where they're like, we're moving on, it's like, but why, though? Because y'all are amazing together.
And in a weird way, it feels like since they've tried to separate them and tried to put them almost a little bit antagonistic towards one another, their chemistry is actually so great that it's actually making people remember why they wanted them together.
That's
in the first
exactly
place.
Right. I don't know if that's accidental. Are they planning that? I don't know. And I don't want to spoil anything for Todd, but... You know, things have happened, so things are changing still. But it adds another layer to their breakup, quote unquote breakup. You know, the things
plus,
that happened.
She's moved on to this. She suddenly lost her taste in men. You know, she's got this skinny, skinny, weird police dude that may or may not be Prometheus, right? Well, I don't know. Do we know that yet? At this point yet?
We're not going to spoil anything for you, Todd.
I mean, it's just like the,
there have been revelations.
It's what I call hush disease, right? We've talked about this. If you have a new villain and a new character introduced at the same general time, chances are that character is going to be the secret identity of that villain. But I was also going to say, I'm sorry to interrupt, Jennifer.
No, go ahead.
It's not too different than Smallville's issue that Clark and Chloe had much better chemistry than Clark and Lana did.
Yeah.
And eventually Clark and Lois got that chemistry a bit. I mean, which is good because that's where they were fated to be. But it's if you're a red-blooded American male who's into females and you don't like Felicity Smoke, then there's an issue with you. And probably, as Jennifer and my wife and Miranda can tell you, if you're a red-blooded American woman, and you're not into Stephen Amell, what's up? So
I think that goes both ways.
That's what I'm saying. Okay, yeah, and there's crossover, too. I agree.
I have some deep appreciation for Felicity Smoke as well, especially when she wears the blue dress.
Anyway, so before I stumble over my words, I'm going to say these two characters are so appealing and likable. You root for them and great performances and sexy people. What's the problem?
Exactly.
Exactly. And of course, we've reached the midway point with, again, no spoilers, but what I thought was an incredibly strong season finale for Arrow, or mid-season finale for Arrow just this past week. So, interested to get your take on that, Todd. And to piggyback off of something that Russell mentioned earlier about the action scenes being so much better this year, I feel like as good as the action scenes have been this year, and they've been wonderful, they may have peaked with the mid-season finale with a sequence on an escalator that is as good as anything they've ever done on Arrow. Just spectacular.
Had a bit of a Human Target thing going on in that, too.
It did. Yes, it did, Russell. Very reminiscent of, especially, like, season one of Human Target.
The subway fight, or the high-speed rail fight was the one I was thinking of.
Yep, that, and I think that was actually in the pilot episode of Human Target.
Yep, exactly the one I was thinking of.
And with that being said, let's move on to a more depressing topic, which is the state of Marvel Television network-wise. Obviously on Netflix, they're killing it. We're not even going to address that because many of us haven't watched Luke Cage. Nick hasn't finished Daredevil Season 2 yet. So, but one thing that is not going as well as Netflix is the ABC slate. They were slated at one time to have a show called Marvel's Most Wanted that was going to feature the two best characters from Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., in my opinion, Hunter and Bobby. And instead, that got dropped and not picked up. So that's not happening. Agent Carter, which was a wonderful show, got canceled before its time due to low rate. I don't blame them. It was really low ratings. I wish that they had committed more to it and promoted it better. But it was a great show, and it got canceled. And it's pretty much just left with Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. until next fall when the Inhumans come in. Now, I will admit, I'm not really qualified to talk about this because I stopped watching Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. halfway through last season. But the slate of ABC and Marvel Television, what do you make of it right now? Todd, I'm going to start with you because I think you still watch Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. What do you make of the state of Marvel Television right now? And kind of where do you see it going from here? Do you see it as something that can pick up in the future?
Well, Jeff Loeb. Runs Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., and it's been a so-so season, but because it's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., it's always a so-so season. The show's never been great. It's been mediocre, and then season would get a little bit better for a little bit. It would have a little bit more integration into the movie cinematic universe for one or two episodes and then fall back. It's had great performances by Clark Gregg and Ming-Na, but for the most part, it's just a blast show. However, this year we've watched it with a lot more intent and energy because Ghost Rider is on, and my kids love Ghost Rider. They don't care that it's not Johnny Blaze. They don't care, you know, that he's got like a almost metallic face as opposed to a bone face. They just think he's cool with the fire and the chain. So they've watched S.H.I.E.L.D., which is almost as violent as Arrow, maybe not quite as, but honestly, as a show, it's hard to follow all the twists and turns and all the things going on. Storytelling-wise, I don't think they do a great job of connecting dots necessarily as a show. But if all your eggs are in this basket for Marvel and you're going to spin the Inhumans out of this, I just don't know. Especially now that they've kind of finished up the Ghost Rider arc. Nobody knows what's coming next this next half season. You know, are they going to tie it into Spider-Man? They can tie it into another Marvel cinematic property. Nobody knows, and without the Ghost Rider hook, I'm not necessarily gonna watch it as intently as I did every, you know, I guess Saturday morning, which is what we've been doing with the family. So yeah, I'm really worried that the Inhuman show is going to be really, really, really awful.
Thus proving an old your talk about Ghost Rider just proves an old theory that I've had for many years. Everybody knows this. Kids love Ghost Rider.
Yeah, they almost made it through the Nicolas Cage Ghost Rider movie, which is on Hulu. They did not quite. Did
they get to the scene where he pees fire? That's in Spirit of Vengeance, I believe.
Yeah. Oh, dang it.
Yeah, they prefer Robbie Reyes, honestly. So.
Russell, I know you gave up on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. not long after I did. What are your thoughts on the state of Marvel Television right now on the networks, on ABC in particular, is it something that you see needing improvement? And if so, do you see that improvement coming anytime soon?
Well, allow me to sum it up like this. Wait for it.
And you would think that's the first time you'd heard a toilet flush on the Place to Be Nation, but alas, it is not.
Did you just have an emergency dump, Russell?
No, it was an emergency piss, because that's how I feel about the current state of ABC's Marvel television.
Not to tell tales out of skew, but I may or may not have just had an emergency dump a few moments ago.
I can attest to this.
And there we are. I did give up on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. this season. Quit at episode 3 because, not because it was necessarily awful, but it felt like it just wasn't going anywhere. And I realized as I was watching it that I just didn't give a shit about anything that was happening on screen. And I was like, well, I think I'm done here. They took away my reason for watching this show, which was Bobby and Hunter. And then they didn't give them their own show. And then they canceled Agent Carter, which was a show that I was absolutely in love with for quite a while. And, I mean, it's like, okay, I'm just not going to have any Marvel television to watch that's aimed at me, except for the stuff on Netflix, which we said we weren't really addressing. But that's where I go for Marvel TV now is Netflix, because you know what? ABC, fuck you.
Jenny, I don't know if you watch or have watched Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. or not, but what is your take on the state of Marvel television right now on ABC? What would you like to see them do to kind of reach out and grab new viewers like you?
No, I never did watch. I think I might have tried with season one, and it just didn't click with me. And I didn't watch Agent Carter either, and I'm really not sure why. Maybe because the first Captain America movie was not my favorite, so I just was like, nah, with that. And like Russell said, I watched the Netflix shows. I mean, honestly, I'll give anything a shot.
I think you'd like Agent Carter, actually.
I probably would. Going forward, honestly, I don't know. I honestly don't. I don't have an opinion. It makes something. If my friends like it, I'll check it out. How about that?
Well, unquestionably, I'm sure we're all looking forward to Cloak and Dagger that's coming up on Freeform, formerly ABC Family. Because if an ABC Marvel show doesn't do it for you, I bet an ABC Family Marvel show should just be absolutely wonderful.
Freeform, thank you very much. Yeah. And listen, I could take or leave Cloak. I'm the biggest Dagger fan in the world.
Right,
listen,
right. And it'll be a great addition to their lineup, which will, from what I understand, it'll now feature Harry Potter movie, followed by Cloak and Dagger, followed by another Harry Potter movie.
Followed by that show about cheerleaders.
Pretty Little Liars.
You just do that all week. Yeah. Yes!
I'm too far away from the toilet right now, so just imagine that.
And as an aside, what the people living at home don't know right now is Star Wars Episode 4, A New Hope, is actually on television right now on mute for Nick and I, and I just wanted to comment on how Grand Moff Tarkin and Aunt May would have made a good coupling back in the Steve Ditko Spider-Man years.
Oh, if I had my guitar in tune right now.
Oh.
I will say, what can they do? Is there even a Marvel property that would fit on TV? And yes, there is, and it's called Runaways by Brian K. Vaughan.
Oh, would that would be
perfect.
Cool.
I'm sure it's in development somewhere.
I thought that show was happening.
Yeah, I think it must be.
Isn't that happening on Hulu, if I'm not mistaken?
Okay, well. That'd be great if that does come to fruition, because I think there you have somebody that if you can do that show and maybe even Miss Marvel, I think there's your ideal TV properties.
Yes, Nick is correct. Hulu is getting the into the Marvel business with a season order of The Runaways.
Runaways. Yeah, the Marvel business is what my father did. We're in the comic book entertainment business. Two different businesses. In any event, folks, we are actually in the interest of.
There is one we forgot to mention, though, that's coming up. Legion.
Oh, yeah.
Legion's going to be on FX early next year. I'm actually really looking forward to that. The trailers
are me too.
Really excellent.
So That character, it's part of the X-Men universe?
Yes.
It ties in?
It does.
Isn't he Professor X's son?
He is. Well, his illegitimate kid.
Yeah.
Is this version going to be Xavier's son, though?
That's what I understand. It's not going to be part of the cinematic universe. It's not going to have any ties to the X-Men at all. You're never going to even hear that mentioned. Right?
I think I read some kind of reference where the producer was like, well, it's somewhat connected to the cinematic universe, but not, like, basically giving a non-answer, like, not refusing to answer the question.
According to the information I'm seeing, it is tied to the X-Men film series.
That's what I read last night, too, that it was.
Yep.
Okay. That's hopeful for me. I mean, because that's the only reason that character could be compelling to me. If you go back to the New Mutants, it was cool because it was Xavier's son, and shoot, he's one of the most powerful beings in the universe.
According to Shuler Donner, and this is coming from Mashable, which is a weird name, Shuler Donner, anyway, apparently it is going to tie in to the X-Men movie universe. He says, it is far away from the X-Men movies, yet it still lives within that universe. So, whatever that means. So,
a non-answer, essentially.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I mean, it means that they could theoretically have a guest appearance from, you know, either McAvoy or Stewart.
It probably just means they can. It probably just means they can mention the characters, but they will never actually appear on the show.
Right,
right. I would be willing to play a fat Charles Xavier if they would be interested in that. Anyway, so with all that said, we're actually going to cut an item out in the interest of time, and we're going to move on to the lightning round for TV. All right, guys, is everybody ready for the lightning round?
Bring it.
All right. Favorite show of 2016, comic book related. Russell.
The Flash.
Jennifer.
Legends of Tomorrow.
Ooh, Todd.
The Flash.
Nick, The Flash. And I am going to go with Legends of Tomorrow. This is one I didn't actually pick one for. Favorite episode of 2016, Russell.
Arrow, What We Leave Behind, the mid-season finale.
Very good. Jennifer?
Mine actually comes from The Flash, The New Rogues, Episode 4, with Mirror Master.
Loved it.
Oh, that was great. I love that episode. Todd?
Mirror Master, The New Rogues with Mirror Master in the top on The Flash. Great, 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 perfect Flash episode with the cool Harrison Wells character.
Yes.
Yes. Nick?
The Runaway Dinosaur on The Flash.
Oh, yeah, flashing back to last season, if you will. And my pick is going to be the Arrow mid-season finale as well. That's my pick. And now our next question is kind of going to be forward-looking a little bit. What show or series are you most looking forward to in 2017? Russell?
I misunderstood this question because I picked an episode of a TV show because I'm looking forward to, Kevin Smith's Supergirl Lives. Mostly because it's a nod to his unproduced Superman movie, Superman Lives.
Which we are planning to review in Off the Page in the hopeful near future.
That has literally been on our planning calendar since we started the podcast, and we haven't gotten to it yet. At some point, we will get to it. The idea is to review the script and also look at the...
There's a documentary
film, The Death of Superman Lives, What Happened.
John Peters is insane.
Which I've seen about half of it, and the half I've seen is outstanding.
It is. It's an excellent documentary, and if you guys keep putting it off long enough, you may get an animated version of it just to actually review.
Jennifer, your most anticipated of 2017.
I'm going to go with Iron Fist on Netflix.
Todd?
I'm going to say Powerless on NBC. No, I'm just kidding. That's
no one cares about that.
That's not going to make it out three episodes, I'm guessing. I don't know.
Generous.
So I will say let's look forward to the fall of 2017 and the fifth DC property on the CW, which I predict will be a Jack Knight Starman show. No, it won't be. I don't know.
Oh my God, Todd, I'm having trouble standing upright.
Yeah, I think
no, you're not.
They need. I think we're headed for expansion. This was the most. The crossover was the most watched the CW has ever been in history. It's short tenure. Yep. So why not? I think you just hire a few more writers and producers and make sure Berlanti's still in charge of the whole thing, and we get a fifth show. But they'll probably make it a little something with a little bit more diversity. So I don't know. I'm spinning my wheels trying to think of where they could go. But hopefully it'll be a good I think we will have a fifth show. What do you guys think?
JSA?
That would be good.
JSA would make the most sense.
That would be great.
Do it, and then just do it as a series of, you know, not 26 episode orders. Do it like you did Legends of Tomorrow. I mean, do like 13 episode arcs to cut down on costs. I mean, Justice Society makes way too much sense, especially since you've already introduced the characters.
Yeah, that would make a lot of sense. I'm gonna go a little off the board, and I'm gonna say they finally do the Booster Gold TV show.
Ah.
But is that gonna happen on CW or over at Sci-Fi? Because that's been in production at Sci-Fi for a while.
Well, Sci-Fi can suck it.
Maybe they'll do a Legion.
In any event,
a superheroes show.
Don't tease Kelly's fragile heart that way.
I do know that there's a Supergirl crossover coming with more than just Monel. So
yes, which is going to be interesting. I'm interested to see if they can make me like the other Legion characters the way that they've made me like Monel. But anyway, in the interest of lightning round, Nick, you're most anticipated
my
in 2017.
Marvel's The Defenders.
And mine is going to be Marvel's Iron Fist, or Orange Fist, if you prefer. And with that...
In which we can only hope that Misty Knight winds up getting Iron
Fist. Hey, now!
Or Arnfisted.
Or Arnfisted. Whichever.
You know, Arnfisted me one time. Charlotte, North Carolina. I'll never forget it. In any event...
No matter how much alcohol is involved, right, Blair?
Woo!
Woo! In any event, that brings us to our break. Much needed break right now. And we hope you've enjoyed our first half of the show. When we come back, we're actually going to be talking about the granddaddy of them all, if you will. The mothership, comic books, what we saw and read in comics in 2016. Stay with us through the break. We hope that you'll enjoy the rest of the show.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
Voice of Ring of Honor's Kevin Kelly here. I just want to make sure you're all subscribed to all of our great feeds here at Place to Be Nation. Now, it's really easy to do. Just head to iTunes or your preferred podcatcher app today and search for and subscribe to the Place to Be Nation Wrestling Feed, Place to Be Nation Pop Feed, Pro Wrestling Only Feed, and, of course, the Kevin Kelly Show Feed, which includes the full archives of my podcast. Subscribe, listen, and then rate us and leave feedback today. And, of course, as always, enjoy all the great action of Ring of Honor Wrestling and everything presented to you on PlaceToBeNation.com.
Place to Be Nation's JT Rizzero here, and I want to let you know that we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlaceToBeNation.com, and we offer them to you across two great feeds. On the Place to Be Nation Wrestling feed, you can check out Scott Criscolo and me on the Mothership, the Place to Be podcast with our famous vintage vault pay-per-view reviews. PTBN also covers current-day wrestling with the smash hit Clotheslines and Headlines, our steady veteran main event, and the beloved monthly pay-per-view reaction shows with immediate feedback on all pro wrestling super shows. Relive wrestling's past with our monthly pay-per-view rewind series led by Ben Morse, the always contentious Dangerous Alliance podcast, and Survey Says, a fun look back at the good, bad, and ugly of WCW. On our very popular Place to Be Nation Pop podcast feed, we offer such great shows as the Glenn Butler Podcast Hour Spectacular, Rank and File, NBA Team, Lucha Undead, Geek and Sassy, and a veritable podcast heaven for comic fans with Hard Traveling Fanboys, Sellers Points, Todd Weber's Conversation, and Imaginary Stories. Subscribe to both of those feeds on iTunes and rate and leave feedback for us as well. All of these shows plus others available at PlaceToBeNation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus tournaments and more. Be sure to support our site by using PlaceToBeNation.com/Amazon when doing your online shopping, and download our free Place to Be Vintage Vault Refresh eBooks via the links on the right-hand side of our site. We also want to thank our friends at Boneheads Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island and Fall River, Massachusetts, TheHistoryOfWrestling.com, and Scott Keats' Blog of Doom. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
The PWO PTBN feed has changed its name, now known simply as Pro Wrestling Only, so it should be easy to find and indeed to say. All of your favorite shows are still here, including Where the Big Boys Play, Letters from Kayfabe, Titans of Wrestling, Tag Teams Back Again, This Week in Wrestling, and many, many more, including our full archives of tremendous content. So make sure you subscribe to the Pro Wrestling Only feed today.
little happy new year ain't gonna worry me to death. This little happy new year ain't gonna worry me to death. Don't think about Christmas, cause Christmas just never left.
Welcome back, ladies and gents, to the second most important distinguished night of the year. Of course, the year in review. First, of course, would be the halfies.
Well, I thought
no,
first
would, is watching.
I thought the first would be what
that's
that?
True,
the largest podcast ever.
In Place to Be Nation pop history.
And see, now I just had a little bit of the magic ruined for me because, you know, most of the time here in our Vancouver, British Columbian studios, I've somehow been looking away whenever you've done that, and now I just saw how the sound effect works, and so it's a little bit different.
It's all a bit technical,
right.
Nick, but
the important thing is that our podcast future is secure. It's kind of like looking behind the curtain at Chuck E. Cheese when you're a kid. It just kind of ruins everything.
Yeah, you don't want to know how the cheese is made.
Exactly.
You want to just eat the cheese, right?
Yeah, right.
Well, in any event, we're here now gathered, our panel of experts gathered to talk about the main event, the real reason you all came here, comics, what powers the Place to Be Nation pop engine. And in this year, 2016, we saw a pretty dramatic, I would say, upheaval of things, of the usual order of things this year, of how it's been in recent years. But before we get into the details and the minutiae, I just want to go around the panel and ask everyone, are you comparing to where you were a year ago, are you buying more, less, or about the same amount of comics? Todd, let's start with you on this one. Are you buying more, less, or the same?
More. And do you want to know why?
We would love to know why.
Because of DC Rebirth and the two books monthly for each title, for many of the titles. So that's
it's sheer mathematics, really.
It's simple.
Russell, what about you? Are you buying more, less, or about the same?
Far more. Also for the reasons that Todd said and because Image. Simple. Well, Image is putting out some incredible stuff right now, and I just wound up getting hooked on a lot of it, and I can't put it down.
Yeah, I agree with that, too. I'm buying more Image than I did previously. And almost every name creator from Image that's coming out with something, I'm buying it.
Yep. Now, Jenny, I know your answer to this, but are you buying more, less, or about the same?
100% more.
Yeah, so for people that don't know, that should make it obvious, but Jenny actually just started reading comics this year. What was it that made you start reading comics this year?
It was Rebirth. And I know kind of some of you guys' history with comic books just listening to your shows, but mine was kind of a combination of being in the comics group on Facebook, watching the TV shows, and then you guys' influence kind of directed me to things to read, namely Watchmen, Hush, and Long Halloween. And then Rebirth started, and it started actually when my son was in the hospital in May. It was he was in for 2 weeks, and I had to find a local comic shop in Birmingham, and I would leave the hospital and go pick up comic books. And I think it kind of helped get me through it. I mean, it's a lot of long hours in the hospital, and I think that's why I kind of have a special little place in my heart for DC Rebirth, because it kind of saw me through a tough time.
Where was he in Birmingham, if you don't mind me asking?
He was in Children's Hospital.
I spent 3 months there when I was a kid, so have a lot of praise for Children's and the stuff they do, and Children's Miracle Network, if anybody's ever looking for a good charitable cause to donate, that's my personal favorite.
Absolutely.
In Birmingham, they love the governor.
Boo, boo, boo.
Boo, boo.
Hey, from what I understand, the governor in Alabama's been getting plenty of love, and not just in Birmingham, but in Mobile, Montgomery, and everywhere else.
Don't let the media fool you. It's all been over the phone.
Then it doesn't really count, then.
With the worst phone sex I've ever heard in my life. It's what I imagine my dad's phone sex would be like.
You would imagine that, would you?
First of all, why?
Listen, I've known way too much about my dad over the years that I don't even want to get into on this podcast. Apparently. I don't want to get into it either. In any event.
Story is enough.
That's the thing.
I don't even want to ask like how the phone sex is related to the septic. That's another story for another time. But we've run the gamut here from the emotional to the comedic and to the bizarre in Nick's case. but that's an awesome story, Jenny. And honestly, that's what it's all about. That's what comics are all about. I know that they served that way for me when I was a kid, for Nick when he was a kid, and whenever we go through hard times, we've always got them there to help us out. So that's an awesome story. Let's get Nick. I forgot to ask you, more, less, or about the same as last year?
Definitely more. I mean, everybody talked about Rebirth, and obviously, I think on this panel, that's the biggest reason. But also, you know, I'm not buying very many Marvel books, but this year Marvel has put out some books that I feel like were specifically focused, you know, aimed right in my direction. Whether it was Renew Your Vows coming out this year, Jessica Jones returning with her ongoing series. Excuse me.
Telltale.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, so what Marvel's doing that I'm picking up. I mean, they've got five or six titles that I'm there every month for. So up across the board in all respects.
And for me, I'm buying way more than I was a year ago. I was my list towards the end of the DC New 52 initiative had dwindled to very little, and Rebirth has brought me to my... Actually, I think that I'm buying more monthly or biweekly comics than I probably ever have in my life, maybe dating back to when I was a little kid and would go up there on Fridays with my allowance, but there's a lot of great stuff out there owing to Rebirth. But that kind of gets us started on our first major topic here, DC Rebirth. Now, as a bit of a...
We can say that.
You know, a precursor to it. We are going to be doing our DC Rebirth...
1 year later.
1 year later.
As our next giant size.
Yeah, as our next giant size. That's coming up in a few months. So we want to kind of avoid the minutiae of Rebirth and talking about individual titles and the improvements there and stuff like that. We'll save that for a later date. When all of us can reflect back on Rebirth with some more detail. But what I really want to focus on is the overall effect of Rebirth on the industry and the readership, which I think was the biggest news story in comics in 2016. For the first time in years, DC overtook Marvel, for a while anyway, as the sales king. And even now is staying neck and neck with Marvel in a very competitive race.
And you have to remember that Marvel just is undergoing their most recent relaunch. So a lot of number ones, their sales numbers are obviously going to go up. I think the story of the sales battle is not really going to be known until, you know, January, February. Because Marvel naturally is going to dip back down a little bit because of those number ones. And then, you know, Rebirth, for the most part, will be getting into, like, you know, pushing the 20s, you know, the 20s for some time. I think then you'll kind of have a real good idea of what the sales numbers for both companies
right.
will look
and
like.
And when you look at the sales pre-Rebirth, I mean, Marvel was just crushing DC.
Yeah, not right? even competitive.
DC was dwindling down the charts. So, obviously, it's had a big effect on the industry and on readership. Looking back at the general Rebirth initiative, Jennifer, I want to start with you on this one because it brought you back to comics, but what is it about, without getting into the details of the individual books, what is it about the initiative as a whole that enabled you, I guess, to start reading comics and not feel completely lost?
I think they did a really good job for me of kind of catching me up or giving me an overall tone of a look at the characters themselves. I don't want to, like you said, be specific, but there were a lot that would kind of, they had a way of kind of giving you a little bit of backstory with a lot of the characters that would fill in the gaps, at least from my knowledge. And they didn't expect you to come into it knowing everything. They gave you a basis of knowledge to kind of go forward on. So I didn't constantly feel like I didn't know what was going on. I felt like it was really perfectly formatted for me, specifically not having much knowledge at all going forward with the characters.
Yeah. good point on that. I mean, that's it's always hard, I think, for us as longtime comic book readers to put ourselves in the mindset of somebody who is just new to the medium, who's coming in for the first time. So that's the kind of insight that I love to get, because, you know, me and Nick and Russell and Todd, we've been reading comics for many, many, many years. And it's hard sometimes to remember when we were first starting out reading. So that's definitely awesome to see that the effort is paying off. And some of the things that we need to keep in mind about how to get new readers, which is, you know, not making a new reader feel like they're just avalanched under the weight of things that they have no idea about.
So also, I think it keeps me from being jaded. You know, I don't have a lot of hang-ups, you know, I don't have all these preconceived and, like, you know, this is not right, or, you know, that's not how it's supposed to go. I don't have any of that. So it's
no James Olsen's in your way, essentially.
No.
Very good. Russell, thoughts on the Rebirth initiative and its effects on the industry to this point, anyway?
About as grand a success as DC probably could have hoped for. Given how far they had slipped near the end of the New Two initiative. So overall, I would say a big net positive. I think the real story of Rebirth has yet to, because we haven't seen it necessarily have an effect on Marvel, because this current relaunch they're going through was pre-planned, and I think they're going to see how that works out for them. Which I think some of it may work, but I think they may find that a larger amount of it doesn't really get them to the place they want to be. And if DC Rebirth has any like large reaching effect, I would say that it maybe it has, you know, it causes Marvel to pause for a moment and say, huh, maybe we should think of doing something like that. Maybe they will, maybe they won't, but I will say that much like the New 52, Rebirth has gotten more attention. It has gotten people to come to the comic shop, maybe appealed a little bit more to the lapsed readers than necessarily the brand new readers who've never touched a comic before. But in doing so, much like the New 52, it had the effect of getting those readers to try out books from other companies as well, not just Marvel, but it has upped Image's game as well. Their sales enjoyed a nice little bump, not just from Walking Dead, but from across the board, people being curious and saying, well, I'm here in the comic shop checking out this Rebirth stuff. What are these other books on the shelf? And to me, if it's having that effect, if it's getting more people into the comic shop and getting them to try out other things, then that is absolutely a net positive across the board. So good on DC for doing something like that and doubling down on what makes them stand out, what makes their characters special. And, you know, this truly felt like a where the New 52 maybe felt a little bit more like a Dan DiDio joint. This one feels like a Geoff Johns joint.
Definitely. Agreed. And I think that from my end, one of the big things about Rebirth that it's kind of answered that was a complaint that I had early in the New 52 is I feel like the variety of tones and titles is really good right now, from something ultra gritty like a Deathstroke to something more lighthearted and optimistic like a Blue Beetle to something, you know, like traditional superheroic, something like Superman or Action Comics, the family-oriented stuff.
And even diversity within the specific lines. Like, Detective Comics and Batman are totally different, like, books in terms of their focus and their tone, and yet they still feel, you know, consistent in their characterizations of the characters. And it's interesting how you're able to kind of toe that line and do both. And I've really enjoyed that.
Definitely. Todd, what do you make of the Rebirth initiative? And in particular, one thing that I wanted to ask you, I will probably delve deeper into it when we do the look back at Rebirth specifically, but in addition to your own take on Rebirth and what effects it's had on you and in particular, also, if you have the ability to kind of compare it to any of the prior, I mean, DC's had many attempted kind of revamps and relaunches over the years. Is there one that this most is like, in your opinion? So, Todd, take it over.
I've really enjoyed most of Rebirth. Maybe Justice League has been the weakest of the books that I've read of all of them. But I'm reading, you know, 4 Superman books a month, 4 Batman books a month, 2 Aquaman books a month. I just got into Green Lantern again after basically being gone since Geoff Johns left. Aquaman has been very strong. I said that before. But, yeah, Rebirth's been a tremendous success. Wonder Woman's been maybe one of the best books the DC's put out since Rebirth has come out. And I would say if I was going to compare it to anything, I'd say the immediate post-crisis time where you had the burn on Superman, Perez on Wonder Woman. Mm-hmm. You had the after Legends, you had the great Giffen, DeMatteis, Maguire, Justice League. You had a kind of creative renaissance at DC. You had the early days of the Messner Lebs, Flash,
Suicide, yeah,
and Ostrander Suicide Squad. You had a really
Frank Miller's Batman Year One too, yeah, right?
Right after Crisis, yeah. You had a lot of things coming at DC, so I'd say that is maybe the closest comparison. I mean, it's so much tighter continuity than New 52 was, even, which is cool. And there's a lot going on. We're spending more money. We're reading more books, but they may be slightly quicker reads. You know, Titans, I'm loving, especially after 5, Titans has been very strong, even though the art has not been the strongest. But I'm going to say that just there's more of a legitimate reason to be into each of these books. Each of these books is compelling and keeps you hanging on. I haven't been able to check out things like Blue Beetle. There are a couple other books. I have zero interest in Suicide Squad. I don't know what they could do. Even the threat of Jim Lee art on it, I just didn't want to go there. And I'm probably going to avoid Justice League versus Suicide Squad for the same reasons. Just I don't feel compelled.
Let's hold off talking about the specific books for now because we want to address those.
Yeah, Rebirth overall, good. Yay.
that's great. And I'm glad – I'm interested in that you said the comparison to post-crisis because that's kind of what I have kind of thought, but I didn't – you know, I was not really reading actively at the time when Crisis happened, of course, but, you know, I read the trades after. But that's kind of what this reminds me of in terms of, like you said, the creator, I guess, renaissance of sorts where the creative teams have been so strong on these books and it's really led to a burst in new readership, I guess you would say. Nick, your thoughts?
Well, I mean, it's just, you know, everybody has kind of brought the same point in that it for at a basic level, it has restoked the fires of interest. Like, I was kind of like you, Greg. I was still buying several books towards the end of the New 52, but my interest was certainly starting to wane pretty heavily, especially with, you know, the Scott Snyder and Greg Capullo Batman getting ready to come to a close. But I think the biggest surprise to me about Rebirth has been, you know, Jennifer's a perfect example, how well it has played to what would seem to be two totally different audiences. It's brought in new readers, but also spoken to longtime comic fans like us and lapsed fans. It really, you know, when it was first announced and they kind of announced the premise of the entire thing, I was under the impression that it would be, you know, kind of difficult to bring new readers into it because it sounded like it was going to be doubling down on, you know, continuity and longtime concepts that have been around that, you know, a deeper historical understanding of the characters and concepts would assist you in. But really, it seems like it's played well to almost every audience. And I think that's been my biggest surprise, biggest takeaway. And if they can maintain that, you know, sky's the limit for DC in terms of their publishing.
And the approach that they've gone with and that I think that has been successful for Marvel in the past and can be again is there is a book for everyone. Mm-hmm. If one book doesn't work, I mean, you and I both, Nick, have tried out books that we never thought we'd try out.
Right.
And some of them have stuck, some of them haven't. But in any event, there's a book for us that or multiple books in some cases. So I agree with everything that's been said. It's been a rousing success. And I'm hopeful that Marvel can match it. And that I'm also hopeful that the sales stay strong as they have. And if they do, then it's going to be better for everyone across the board. Marvel fans, DC fans, Image fans, independent fans, fans of everyone. And the industry is doing better when the top guys are doing better.
Right, and that's one thing that hasn't really been talked about. I mean, and Russell kind of touched on this a little bit, I think. You know, yes, DC sales numbers are way up, but comic book sales in general are up, mm-hmm. which is good for everybody. I mean, obviously DC's the biggest beneficiary of that, but more comics are being sold than they were a year ago, which is great for an industry that oftentimes struggles with growth.
Absolutely, absolutely.
I mean, one that we didn't touch on was a new startup company called Aftershock. They have They have a book called Animosity that has gone to a fifth printing for its first issue. And, I mean, that's a Marguerite Bennett written comic, and it's been a massive hit for them. And I don't know that it would have hit as well if more people hadn't, you know, put eyes on it, thanks to that Rebirth initiative getting people into the shop. So that's a clear example of a small print house and a smaller print run comic company that is directly benefiting from more people coming into the shops.
Absolutely. Well, speaking of Marvel, who we've mentioned a few times here, Marvel kind of built, while DC built its year around its Rebirth event, Marvel kind of built its year around an event of its own. And Nick, what would you say the reception has been for Civil War II this year?
It's been somewhat unique. Somewhat unique, you might say. Just somewhat unique. It's really not for us to say.
It's not for us to say, folks. Listen. If anybody out there in the Twitterverse, I can hear it now. They're tweeting me right now. Oh, JR don't like Civil War II. I never said I didn't like Civil War II. I never said I liked it either. I never said anything of substance, folks. Anyway. So Civil War II is still happening, as I understand it. And, damn it, Todd. And,
Halloween. Costume bowling.
Yes.
Anyway, sorry. Anyway,
we're off topic.
We're spiraling out of control.
A little inside baseball there, folks.
We just threw the format sheet right out the window.
Because fuck it.
Much to Tim Capel's joy, I'm sure.
Yes.
But Civil War II, Nick, you've been reading it.
Yes.
What has it been like? Because the reception to it has been very divisive. There are some that like it. There are a lot of people that are very vocally against it. Not for it, again it.
The best way I can describe it, it's the least eventful event comic I've ever read. Like, for the first five issues, nothing happened. Like, it was literally just characters who seem to have a mild disagreement on something rather than a true civil war. And now I'm not someone who's read a ton of Captain Marvel over the years, but I know she is one of the characters in Marvel who has really enjoyed a surge in popularity over the last few years. And I will say, based on my limited understanding of the character and reading, you know, some of the reactions online, there are a lot of people who are really upset with the characterization of Carol Danvers in Civil War II and some of the directions they're taking her character, which, you know, and they kind of have a point here. Is this really the time to be taking such heavy or such great risks and liberties with that character when we should be, you know, promoting her and building towards the movie, which is coming in a couple of years, which really has the opportunity to put her firmly into the A-list in the eyes of the larger pop culture community. So, you know, Civil War II has just been, I question the entire concept, essentially. I mean, there are times when the writing is pretty good because it's Bendis, and I mean, you know, he writes dialogue well, but just the entire idea of the story, it feels like a shameless cash grab to launch around the same time as the movie. Like, that was why they were doing it, is what it feels like to me. And I just don't buy it I don't buy the entire premise as a universe-shaping event. It doesn't, you know, it's that question of preemptive justice that has been done so many times in comics, and it doesn't feel like a civil war. It doesn't have that same impact that the original did. So, and you know, as always with events, it comes a slew of tie-ins. And I know there's been a lot of creators who are somewhat upset that their books have been sucked into these, you know, Civil War II tie-ins, which is always a concern to have. So, I'm not as low on it as a lot of people are, but I will agree it's been problematic and again somewhat unique.
Anybody else here on the panel reading Civil War II right now?
No.
Todd?
And that's your answer. I mean, that shows your answer right now. I mean, like, we got, you know, a panel of people who are hardcore comic fans who at least want to be, even if they're not reading, want to be up to date on what is going on, and this is just not. This isn't even drawing interest from people in terms of, hey, I'll click through Bleeding Cool and have this, you know, see what's going on in the story. Like, there's just a general apathy about this event, it seems.
I have kept up just through articles, not through actually that necessarily reading the issue. It'd be mostly in, like, you know, spoiler articles, which a lot of sites just can't help themselves in this current climate. And as I would read these stories and hear what, or at least see what was happening in Civil War II, it left me with really only one way to describe it.
Wait for it.
That's a lengthy flush. It's powerful. It sounds like the old. Do you remember the?
Nope,
the
flusher.
You didn't know me when I lived at Shackelford Hall. The bathrooms in Hall at Troy. You could flush a brick down those things. Amazing. Anyway,
how did the brick get in there?
Well, that's another story for another time, my friend. Lots of bad eating habits in college.
Bricks. And the love hate affair with Taco Bell was born.
But this kind of speaks to another issue that I think Civil War is kind of, at least for me as someone who doesn't read Marvel regularly, is endemic of this constant cycle of events. For as much as DC got flack for that over the years, Marvel has taken it to a new level. Two events a year that just constantly flow into one another. It feels impossible for me to jump in. Todd, what do you make of the perpetual event cycle right now? And is it, in your opinion, is it something that's been harmful, or is it just this particular event that is not clicking with you?
I think it sucks. You get these events, and then they go on for a whole year. Secret Wars 2, year and a half maybe. And then you get the next event starting in a couple months from then. Well, I'm reading the majority of my Marvel books 6 months after they're published, because I subscribe to the Webby Award-winning Marvel Unlimited. And the only Marvel books I'm reading new, in floppies, as we call them, are Old Man Logan, Mighty Thor, The Unworthy Thor, Jessica Jones, and Champions. I mean, that's not a big – Marvel publishes dozens and dozens of books every month. And that speaks to two things. It speaks to Marvel Unlimited being awesome and you having access to all these things on your tablet or your computer, but or even your phone. But also there's not a lot of compelling reasons for these crossovers to suck you in. I mean, is it really affecting Thor? Is it really affecting – I guess it's affecting the Champions just a little bit, the spawn of that book. Marvel's also got this other crossover going on, the Inhumans versus X, or the – I don't know what else they're calling it. But that's a big mess too, because nobody gives a shit about the Inhumans. And you have the X teams coming out here pretty soon with a team of veterans, and then the team of Magneto with the all, quote-unquote all-new time-displaced X-Men, which is another problem in and of itself.
So, and don't forget, Greg is an anti-time displacement.
Yeah, it's just,
and you're an anti-Archite.
That's untrue.
I liked it for the first couple of years, but the logical conclusion would be for them to go back and, you know, maybe lose their memories and go back to their place in the timeline. But that hasn't happened yet. So I just think Marvel's a mess, and it's due for a total company-wide reboot. I think it's time.
Tim and I have talked about that in the past, and Tim is the same way, and he's, you know, what a big Marvel diehard he is, and he honestly was hoping that the Marvel Now initiative was a hard reboot, which it wasn't.
And that's one thing we should probably mention is, you know, this constant cycle of events that feeds into a constant cycle of, I don't even know if I should call it a relaunch or a reboot, but a constant cycle of event followed by
initiatives,
renumbering initiatives where you hit with a slew of number ones. And, you know, at this point, like, I've kind of been wondering, do Marvel ongoing series even really exist anymore?
No.
I mean, like because books are only going to reach 15, maybe 18 issues. I mean, Thor: God of Thunder, which ran 25 issues, was actually one of the longest running books in Marvel at that point at 25 issues. Because the relaunch cycle is so constant. It comes every year. Mm-hmm. And it's almost like they have fully adopted the format that Kevin Smith suggested for a long time, which was that comic books should be, you know, done by seasons. And that's kind of what it feels like Marvel is going to, even if they aren't explicitly calling it that.
I mean,
it's going to make cataloging books really hard for
people. It already has. Yeah. I mean, obviously. For me.
Yeah. Maybe Spider-Man, Amazing Spider-Man could be the only one that could still deserve its original numbering at this point. And even then, it's so convoluted and has had so many diversions. What if you think if
if Heroes Reborn had been a bigger success, would that have functioned as an actual reboot? Or if the Ultimate Universe had been even a bigger success, would they have dropped the 616 altogether? I mean, have they created these backdoor, half-assed attempts to relaunch while not totally disregarding the original universe?
Right, like sort of like trying to have their cake and eat it too, so to speak. Because I always thought that about the Ultimate Universe, and when I was a punk teenager, that's why I opposed the Ultimate Universe at first, is because I thought they were going to replace all of the stories that I had read with this one when I was a teenager, and I wasn't even reading comics at the time, which is funny. And so that's why I can't really comment too much about Heroes Reborn, because that came during my non-comics reading period. But from what I've read about Heroes Reborn, they actually intended for it to be that, and they were hoping that it would be this huge success, and it kind of wasn't, and they kind of, you know, did away with it and went back to the status quo, just without the teenage Iron Man.
Yep.
So anyway, that is very, very interesting, the state of Marvel. Jennifer, I think you are actually reading one Marvel title. Is that right?
I'm reading Jessica Jones, and then as of this week, I'm going to be reading Dr. Aphra. I always want to put an L in her name for something.
I'm so glad you mentioned that. We haven't even talked about the Star Wars Marvel books. I feel like that's another story. Mm-hmm. The Star Wars line has been incredible for Marvel. They're boosting the sales. We have, without spoiling anything, folks, you can go and listen to our podcast, which now would have been released last week, where we're talking about Darth Vader, the first volume of that. But these Star Wars books seem to have been very successful. What was it that made you pick up Dr. Aphra, who's a character that's not even from the movies?
Well, at the free comic book Halloween Comic Fest, the Halloween thing, I went to my comic shop and got a free copy of one of her books, and I just loved it. It was different. It's different than anything I've read. I do love Star Wars. I've heard really good things about the Star Wars books and the Darth Vader books. So they were all on my to-be-read list. So when her number one came out this past week, I picked it up, and I just loved it. I love her character. She's something
anybody
different.
Anybody want to hear my
I like her a lot.
Nick Duke endorsed Never Gonna Happen fan theory? Dr. Yes. Aphra for Rey's mom. That's my... I would pop for me if that ever happens.
And I'm
Mara Jade, dude. It's Mara Jade.
Are you one of those people who like you wanted to spoil things because the old extended universe is gone?
Yeah, but they're taking and picking and choosing what they like from the extended universe too. Thrawn is shown up.
Yeah, on Rebels.
So I have to imagine that this is gonna that there will be some supporters for that way. I mean, we don't know who Rey's parentage truly is right now. And also, have we talked about Rogue One at all?
We have not.
Okay, I have a theory. I guess I'm gonna take this off topic. So Rogue One's coming out, right?
It's already out right
it's
now.
It's out.
It's out in theaters right
now.
I saw it last
on the night it came out, the first premiere. I had quite an opinion on it that I'm not going to share at this time.
Awesome. Cool. But you can find the official review on PlayStation.com.
Right now. But right anyway, now, yes, but I get what you're driving at, Todd.
I'm just kidding, guys.
Oh, so in any event, the Star Wars books have been super successful. They are pretty much rocking everybody's world that's reading them right now. And it's kind of, if you look at the sales charts, they're dominating for Marvel. Russell, last question before we finish up and head to our lightning round. Actually, no, we've got one more before the lightning round. But real quickly, what do you think that this says, if anything, for licensed comics? Because this is a little bit unprecedented in a recent memory for licensed comics to be this successful. Do you think this is something the big two will be looking at more in the future?
I think they already are. If you look
Turtles.
At you look at the Batman and Ninja Turtles crossover that was very
DC's
successful. DC's Hanna-Barbera line, also the Justice League Power Rangers crossover that's happening.
Green Lantern, Planet of the Apes.
There's
Star Trek
Lantern,
too.
Planet of the Apes. Green Lantern, yep. Star Trek is the bigger one for me. All of that has been very successful between IDW and DC. So I think that Marvel having Star Wars there, that has been their launch into the idea of licensed comics. DC's been you know, been able to work across the board with their, I guess, sort of competitor IDW, and it has produced some pretty great stuff. So there is a future for licensed comics. There's also been the Revolution line that's been happening over at IDW between stuff like Transformers and a relaunched Mask title, which we talked about on the very first episode of Sellers Points that you can
I did hear that one.
good. I'm glad Todd listened to at least one of our shows. You can find that now on the Place to Be Nation pop feed and on the placetobenation.com website, featuring Greg, actually. He was on the very first episode.
Absolutely, positively.
So, yes, there is a future and even a pretty strong present, actually, for licensed comic. I would say folks need to go out and check out Transformers, Ghostbusters, which is a Ghostbusters International, which has a really strong comic right now. So there's good stuff out there.
I want a John Wick comic book series from either Marvel or DC.
Yeah.
I would read the hell out of that.
James Bond Dynamite books have been really good as well. Yeah. So, I mean, that's out there.
Well, from really good news and from really good books to let's get to some really sad news. 2016 has been a bitch of a year in terms of
everything
pretty much. Taking a lot of lives way too soon. And among those lives that were taken way too soon were two comic book legends, Darwin Cook and Steve Dillon, both passed away this year and left ginormous legacies in the industry. Darwin has been working in the industry for decades and has provided some of the greatest work of all time, most notably probably DC's The New Frontier. And of course, Steve Dillon is the artist mastermind behind Preacher, behind the Punisher reboot in the 2000s with his longtime collaborator, Garth Ennis. Todd, I know that both of these creators have meant a lot to you. What are your lasting memories of these two?
You know, both of them are kind of timeless artists that it just kind of stands out as unique visions. And New Frontiers, just a perfect contained Silver Age, just beautiful work that. If you don't have it, buy it in some form or another.
I have the absolute edition.
Do you?
Yeah.
Cool. So I do too.
Really awesome.
And it's worth it. Every penny if you can get it. Just that giant artwork pops on there. But it wasn't all that he did. I mean, his All-Star Western mm-hmm. is great. Every little short story he did is awesome. His series called Parker is on my wish list. I will get that. It's an adaptation of the crime fiction novels that I think he was doing one by one. But so that bummed me out. And he was a friend of a friend, which fairly bummed me out. And then Steve Dillon's work was so personal to me because Preacher is one of my all-time, just it's with me forever and ever. I watch the Preacher show, but it's not quite Preacher to me. Preacher to me is just the panels that Steve yep. Dillon drew. And those moments, just those beats, those facial expressions, those emotions conveyed, the humor, everything. And just a fantastic artist and the right choice. And just the symbiosis between he and Ennis on Hellblazer first, and then Preacher, and then Punisher. You have some amazing runs of comics that will stand the test of time and I'll remember forever. So I'm grateful for their work, but just such a depressing thing, and both of them passed very young, relatively, and in only a couple months apart. So, yeah, definitely. It just sucks. But I'm grateful that we have so much of their work to still enjoy.
Absolutely. Nick, I know that you haven't probably read as much of Darwin as some of us, but you have read some of his work, and you're a big fan of Steve Dillon. What do you look back and remember about these two?
Well, obviously, anytime you talk about Darwin, the conversation always starts with New Frontier, which – you know, that's my biggest exposure to him. And, of course, it's like Todd said, it's a masterpiece. Like, it is required reading for any DC fan. Like, it's one of the 5 or 10 stories that if somebody were going to start reading DC, you know, you would kind of want to put that in their hands just because of how amazing it is. And I want to throw a little shout-out. I don't even know where it first appeared, but you guys probably remember the Darwin Cook story that is included in Green Lantern Rebirth in the trades.
Jeff Johns and Darwin Cook
that little short story that's always resonated mm-hmm. with me for whatever reason. I maybe because of its tie, you know, in the Rebirth in the Rebirth trade, but
one of the iconic Hal Jordan artists.
Yeah, really, really great. And then of course Steve. Go ahead.
It appeared in one of those secret files.
Secret Origins. Yeah, because I got that comic about a year and a half ago at a convention, and I was so happy to find that. So yeah.
Right. But you know, when we talk about Steve Dillon, for me the conversation begins and almost ends with Preacher. I know he did other things, and I've enjoyed his work in other places, but Preacher, much like Todd said, is just so iconic, and it resonates with me in a way that I don't think any other, you know, original creation has done in a long, long time. Just outstanding work. It images that you'll never forget, whether it's the panel of John Custer hugging Jesse, or you know, various other images from that title. But
how about Jesse seeing his mom in Salvation?
Yeah, that's great. And I want to throw a little shout out to both DC and Marvel for the way that they, you know, memorialized both of these guys this year. I know when Darwin died, you got the spread of the New Frontier characters in the back of a lot of DC books. Most recently, they did a 2-page spread of Jesse, you know, with a little quote from Peter there to memorialize him. And then Marvel, this, you know, very recently did some single pages of Frank Castle standing beneath a tree for some Steve Dillon art that was also very very classy, a nice touch from both companies. So I just wanted to throw props their way.
Russell, I know you're a big fan of these guys as well. Your memories of Darwin Cook and Steve Dillon.
I will say that it was Darwin Cook's death that really hit me hard, because it was so unexpected. Nobody knew how bad it was, except for those who were like closest to him, because he's a very private guy. And of course, we've talked about New Frontier quite a bit, and of course that was my first like true exposure to him. But after that, it was kind of all downhill for me. I had to go and like check out this guy's stuff, as much of his stuff as I could possibly find, from Batman Ego to his brief stint on Catwoman with Ed Brubaker.
Oh, that was amazing. Selena's Big Score, I think, was the
Selena's
name.
Big Score. Yep. There he was on Catwoman number 1 through 4 with Ed Brubaker, and then he did Catwoman. He did Selena's Big Score as a solo effort. He also did a crossover of Batman and the Spirit.
Batman Ego. Have you read that?
That's the first one I mentioned. Yes, that was another of his that is absolutely outstanding. And I can't not mention his work on Before Watchmen, Minutemen 1 through 6, which was a tremendous piece that, as skeptical as a lot of us were about a Before Watchmen idea, and as hit and miss as it was, you could take Minutemen and you could set it right alongside the original and say, this is a worthy inclusion to that world. This feels like stepping back into the world that Alan Moore and Dave Gibbons started us with.
Yep.
And this guy nailed it top to bottom. My feelings on Steve Dillon, of course, I have read Preacher. I've read all of it. And while I don't have as strong a connection as other folks on the panel, the loss of Steve Dillon was a mighty shock to me the day that I heard about it. Heard about it from Greg, actually. He told me that it had happened, and it seemed unbelievable, because he was another guy that, you know, cut down in his early, still felt like the early part of his life. Like he wasn't in his twilight years. But these guys still felt like creators who still had more that they could have done, maybe even more that they really wanted to do and were planning to, but this kind of shows you how fragile life can be. It's a stark and sobering reminder of just how short life really is, and that, you know, you see the work that these guys did, the great legacies they leave behind, I think should serve as a reminder to all of us to make the most of the time you have, because this really is all you get.
Absolutely, and I'm just going to echo what everybody else has said. Both of these creators meant a lot to me. Both of them had an impact on me. And Jennifer, have you had a chance to read any work from Darwin Cook or Steve Dillon?
Correct me if I'm wrong. I think I read a Green Lantern book called No Fear that I think had some Darwin Cook art. Is that right?
Yeah, it would have. Yes,
that was that had the story that Nick was referring to. I think. Yep.
Right. Right. Yeah.
Yep.
Had Secret Files 2005.
So that that would be the only one I've read, and I really liked it. And I actually own the first volume of Preacher, but I haven't read it yet. But
you'll dig it.
The good thing about it is that even if they're gone, you know, their art still is there, and absolutely, I can still have a connection with it.
Oh, totally. And knowing your tastes in comics, you're going to love Preacher.
Preacher,
yeah. It's right up your alley. Yep. And, well, that brings us to an end here, but we do have a lightning round to follow up on. And this is going to be kind of a little bit more extensive than our previous lightning round. We have a few more, at least one more question here than we've had in the previous rounds. But let's get cracking here. What is one book that you're buying right now that you would never have expected that you would be buying? And let's start off with you, Nick.
Oh, man, one book that I'm buying that I'm going to cheat and give you two. Superman and Batgirl and the Birds of Prey.
All right. Russell?
Red Hood and the Outlaws.
Wow.
As you folks
very
know,
unexpected.
As you folks know, my well-documented dislike of Scott Lobdell, you'd think that would have kept me away, but nope, that Dexter Soy art got my attention, and I'll be damned, he has turned it around. This is a fantastic read every single month.
Jennifer, what about you? One book that you wouldn't have expected you'd be reading?
I'm going to go with Reborn from Greg Capullo.
Very cool, very cool. I actually haven't read that one yet, but that's great. Heard great things. Todd, what about you?
Green Arrow. Because after Jeff Lemire left, I kind of was – Lemire Sorrentino's work was so strong on that, and then the aftermath of that was so lame that I thought, oh, there's no way they're going to bring back anything. I don't think they're going to be doing anything cool with this. So, yeah, Green Arrow.
Very cool. With me, I am going to say Deathstroke. That's my pick. Now, three standout books of the year. Nick, you want to start us off?
Sure. I'll go Old Man Logan, Detective Comics, and, of course, Aquaman.
Jennifer, what about you?
I'm going to say Wonder Woman, Green Lanterns, and Trinity.
Very good. Russell?
I'm going to go with Superman. Reborn and Old Man Logan.
Very good. Todd, what about you?
I'm going to say AD by Scott Snyder. Just that first issue with the art by Jeff Lemire. It's super tremendous. And even though there's only been a very small sample size, well, it was actually quite a large sample size if you read the first issue. That book is tremendous. Also going to say Paper Girls by Brian K. Vaughan has been outstanding, and Aquaman as well.
Aquaman. Everyone loves Aquaman. I am going to go with Deathstroke, Superman, and I am going to finish it off by saying Detective Comics. Now, we finish up with one more lightning round question. What do you hope to see in comics in 2017? And I'll get started on this one. I hope to see an increased diversity in tones and styles across the lines of both major companies. I hope, and I hope to see the spirit of Rebirth continue into 2017 and not lose its way. Nick?
I want Marvel to outright steal the rebirth idea and formula right down to replacing Spider-Man with the married version of the character in the mainstream continuity.
Todd?
I want to see a DC streaming service much like Marvel Unlimited. because
you mean a hypothetical online hypothetical online DC Comics unlimited subscription service?
I do, because I'm spending way too much on DC trades right now.
That could potentially sponsor a certain clusterfuck of a show.
Yeah, I think Todd just won the panel here with that answer. But Russell, what about you? What do you hope to see from comics in 2017?
Echoing everything that you said, Greg, a rebirth double down, a Marvel style rebirth, and I want to see DC basically rip Image off from the ground up for their Vertigo line. I want a Vertigo resurgence. I want them to finally turn that into a true creator-owned publishing house that can truly rival Image. And I don't just mean going back and rehashing the old Vertigo standbys and trying some stupid idea like, oh, I don't know, a Preacher relaunch. Don't do that. I mean, go for true creator-owned books and do for the Vertigo line what Image has done for itself by being a creator-owned house. Do that.
And also steal Image's approach to getting trades out and pricing
them. Yes. The trade turnaround, not just for Vertigo, but for DC in general, get better. Marvel and Image are killing it with the turnaround time on their trade publications, and DC has no excuse for taking like 7 months after a story arc ends to get a book out. That's just ridiculous.
Totally. Jennifer, what do you hope to see from the world of comics in 2017?
Well, I think I've been a little bit spoiled with my rebirth experience because I'm not a jaded comic book fan yet. And so just continued excellence. Don't let me down. Don't let me become like these jaded old men I got to listen to.
Hold on.
Very good. Very good. Very good. That's a great. Certainly, we're all hoping for that, for the continued success and quality that we've experienced across the world of comics in 2016, which has somewhat been a bit of a safe haven for us from the rest of the events of 2016, other than a certain football game that was played back in January for me. But that was good. Other than that, everything else downhill. But anyway, we hope everybody out there enjoyed the show. We hope everybody out there also enjoyed their Christmas and is getting ready for a rockin' New Year's with Dick Clark, hopefully, if he's can be reanimated at some point. And
is it going to be like young Dick Clark or stroke-addled Dick Clark?
I'm not going to comment on that. I'm not going to dignify that.
The show to go off there, folks. Just be happy that it lasted this long.
And there was two toilet flushes in it as well.
And that still wasn't taking it off the rails.
Let's go around the table here and do some my favorite part of every show, self-promotion.
Shameless promotion.
Tell everybody where they can find you on social media and what they can look for from you in as the new year turns. Todd, the host of Conversation Comics, where can people find you on social media, and what do you have possibly cooking for the new year?
I continue my series with Mr. Tim Capel. We're going to be looking at more of the Byrne and Claremont run of Uncanny X-Men, and I hope to just... I think keep the show going, and I hope that PTBN Pop continues its strong weekly and semi-monthly comics coverage. And you can find me at Todd Weber Guitar on Twitter is the easiest way. And be prepared for a lot of Sacramento Kings conspiracy takes there.
not a big fan of NBA officiating is Mr. Weber. Russell, tell everybody out there where they can find you on social media and what you've got cooking for the new year.
Well, you can find me on Twitter at Russell_Sellers, and you can check out me retweeting a whole bunch of stuff from all the rest of these folks on this panel, as well as me randomly bitching about who knows what. It just depends on my mood for that particular day, but it's never entertaining, so you never know. And as far as the Sellers Points podcast with me and the illustrious Ginger Bear Kelly Poole, We got a lot of stuff cooking up in 2017. We're already in the process of booking guests. There will, of course, be more top and bottom five, as well as our regular segments of the Missed and the Maligned the Guide 2 episodes. But we're going to be introducing two new segments. This is going to be an exclusive announcement here on this podcast to tell you guys what we're doing. We are going to be introducing the Speculator Corner, which us reading the tea leaves, playing off of, as Nick knows, my favorite segment, talking about those rumors. Those rumors, they're fun.
Yes.
We're going to be steering into the skid. And me and Kelly and various guests will be giving our takes on random things that are going to be coming up. You just...
Well, hopefully for your rumor podcast, you can get some of the fine folks over at Latino Review to join you.
Absolutely, if old Umberto wants to come on the show, I've got a few things I'd like to discuss with him.
Russell, I think you could probably get Umberto Gonzalez. I think it's doable.
It might be doable, and I'm gonna go see if I can borrow a certain Lucille, and we'll sit in a room and discuss it. And we'll also be introducing a segment that I'm really looking forward to called Rebooked, where we take a comic story, TV show, or movie that maybe didn't really work for folks all that well, and we work to make it better. And in fact, we've already booked.
That's really good. That's a really good segment. I wish we had come up with that. That's great.
And we are ready to announce our very first one that you can look for Rebooked Issue 1 coming up in February, where we will be looking at the 2011 Green Lantern movie, and we will be rebooking the hell out of it, which will also be followed by our first Speculator Corner, where we will read the tea leaves on the very early returned DC TV universe, which will be the CW shows, Arrow, Flash, Legends, and Supergirl. So we've got some surprise guests lined up, some not-so-surprise guests as well, but can't go too much into that because the ink ain't exactly dry on the contracts yet, folks. So we've already started that ball rolling, but there are some surprises coming your way, so stay tuned for that.
Very good, and as everyone knows, we deal in contracts here at Leafy Nation Pop. We're all making so much money right now that the rising tides carry all boats or everything, whatever the expression is, and we're certainly all experiencing a windfall of financial success here. So thanks for that, folks out there. Jennifer, where can folks find you on social media, and what do you have cooking for the new year?
Well, I'm at Jenny Chrissy, R-U-Z, 2814, and the podcast is at Geek and Sassy. Actually, I need to meet with my editorial board to determine what we're going to come up with in the new year. Me and Miranda like to keep things a little bit loose, a little flowing. We're not as rigid as some of you guys, but we like to kind of go with the flow on our...
Are you calling us...
I mean, you said it.
No one said that about me and Nick in a long time.
So honestly, I don't have anything to tease other than maybe one of the panelists possibly being on the show at one point.
I have agreed to nothing.
Yes, I think yes. Well, in any event, all of these great folks, follow them on social media, listen to the great podcasts right here at Place to Be Nation Pop. Your only place to be in your pop culture world, the only place in your culture world, I think. Yeah. In any event, all the podcasts are great. Listen to them. They're fun. They're entertaining. Help you get through your work day. Help you get through, in my case, my incredibly long drive to work. So that's always fun. Also, check out all the great wrestling content here at Place to Be Nation, the sports content, JR's podcast. He gets upset if you don't promote his podcast on your podcast. So you can check out JR's podcast. It's great. And anything else do we have to shill for now, Nick?
Well, you know, of course, they can always find us on Twitter at dphillips8652 and at nickduke87. It is also my understanding that we have Place to Be Nation email addresses, and it is possible that people could be sending mail there, although I'm not entirely sure. We, of course, have the Place to Be Nation Comics Facebook page.
Yeah, check that out.
Where
a lot of great stuff on there.
Is posted. And then for Greg and I specifically, just to give you kind of a little idea of what you can expect in the new year, we do have a bit of a schedule change that we're gonna be undertaking. We're going to be moving Hard Travelers for Hire to the first week of each month. Long Bun will be the second week. Off the Page will be the third week. and Countdown will be the fourth week of each month. And that's, we're doing that basically because we, for a long time, we've been back-to-backing Hard Travelers for Hire and Off the Page. So it was two straight, typically a movie or television show watches in a row.
Big time investment. Yeah.
We kind of wanted to break that up a little bit. So anyway, the month of January, Hard Travelers for Hire, we're going to be taking a look at the Thor, the first Thor film in the MCU.
Hopefully, we'll be joined by Todd Weber.
Hoping to have Todd Weber on for that show. We're going to be doing a long book hunt on the somewhat controversial Dark Knight Strikes Again. We're also going to be looking, you know, doing a podcast that I know Russell's probably been waiting for me to do for some time, as we're going to be going off the page with the animated series Ultimate Spider-Man. And also, we're going to be finishing off the month with a countdown of our bottom five DC stories of all time.
Yeah, that lot of thinking. Thinking. Yeah. A lot of thinking to do here, folks. But again, hope you guys have a wonderful new year and stay tuned to all of our great comics content. We will be back, of course, as we are every week next week with some new content for you. And in the meantime, go to your local comic book shop and buy some comics. Have a good one, everyone.
When I'm at the movies watching a love scene and the lady's hat is blocking half the screen, I resolve not to shout, take off that hat. I'll remove it gently with a baseball bat. This is my New Year's resolution. When I take a lovely lady out to eat and she orders caviar instead of meat, I resolve to let the lady have her fill. And of course I'll also let her pay the bill. This is my New Year's resolution.
Come on, Sir Frederick Gass. How about Sir Frederick Gass? Come on, boy.
When I'm sitting with my wifey on a bus and a dear old lady stands in front of us, I resolve to be a gentleman discreet. I'll politely offer her my wifey's seat. This is my New Year's resolution.
Hey, Judge Rock, how about your New Year's resolution?
When my mother says, come in, it's time to eat, and I keep on playing games out in the street, I resolve to rush right home now when I'm cold, 'cause my pop just bought a hairbrush and he's bald. This is my New Year's resolution. Hey, Doodles Weaver, how about Professor Beetlebob?
On the radio this year I hope to score with some funny jokes you've never heard before. I resolve not to tell a corny joke. Hello, what's that? The church burned down. Holy smoke. This is my year's rude revelation.
Hey, Spike.
Spike, how about Spike?
In this coming year, I'm gonna be discreet. Have the slickers playing music soft and sweet. I resolve to treat Tchaikovsky tenderly and set his second movement off with TNT.